accept that the city is headed for a disaster of biblical proportions?
Biblical.
What do you mean this Old Testament, Mr. Mayor? Real wrath of God type stuff. Fire and brimstone coming down from the sky. Rivers and seas boiling.
4 years of darkness, earthquakes, volcanoes, sea uprisings from the grave. Human sacrifice, dogs and cats living together. That's hysteria.
What we need right now is a clear message to the people of this country. This message must be read in every newspaper, heard on every radio, seen on every television. This message must resound throughout the entire city. I want this country to realize that we stand on the edge of oblivion. I want every man, woman, and child to understand how close we are to chaos. I want everyone to remember why they need us.
Have you ever had a dream that you were so sure it was real? What if they were unable to overcome that dream? How would you know the difference between the dream and the real?
Sir, continuing the matter. The gentleman may cry. But there is no peace. The war has actually begun. The next mail message we see through the doors will bring to our ears the clash of resounding arms. Our brethren are already in the field. Why stand here idle? What is it that gentlemen win? Look what they have. What is life so dear? So sweet. The price of slavery, permitted Almighty God. I know not what course of that may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Red Pill Radio Show, live on AlternateCurrentRadio.com. I am your host, Ashley Jones, and welcome to The Real. Tonight, I'll be interviewing Dr. Judy Wood. She is the author of the most important book since the Bible called, Where Did the Towers Go? Evidence of Free Energy Technology on 9/11. Tonight, we will be discussing what mechanism was used on 9/11 to turn the World Trade Center towers to dust by examining the forensic evidence of the crime scene. We'll also be discussing the cover-up and the psychological operation that occurred on that day. And also, coming soon to Alternate Current Radio Network will be Dr. Leonard Caldwell. Dr. Caldwell, Opinion Radio, will provide valuable information regarding your health and well-being. Dr. Caldwell has the highest cancer cure rate in the world, confirmed by the Berlin Health Institute. Hear the truth about natural cures for cancer and all other autoimmune diseases, life, politics, sovereignty, the Constitution, freedom, and liberty. Dr. Caldwell, Opinion Radio, coming soon to the Alternate Current Radio Network. Well, at this time, I'd like to bring on my co-host, Jill, a.k.a. Spore, to the line. How are you doing tonight, Jill?
I'm doing great, Ashley. How are you doing?
Very excited. Very excited for the guest that we have on tonight. It's an honor to have her on. You've heard Dr. Judy before, I believe, Spore, right?
Oh, yes. I'm very familiar with her work. I have her textbook. And for all of you listeners out there that don't know who Dr. Judy Wood is, put your seatbelts on because this information is earth-shattering. And also, I'd like to invite everybody to the chat room tonight. We have that open on alternatecurrentradio.com. Just go to the chat bar and log in. And if you have any questions, we can send them to Ashley Jones and Dr. Judy Wood.
Well, yes, absolutely. And so at this time, we're going to play a clip. This is by a musician. His name is Charlie Pound. He's from the UK. And he was inspired after reading Dr. Judy's book, Where Do the Towers Go? And he wrote this little ditty.
Blow. And how much steel did they find?
Welcome back, everyone. I'm your host, Ashley Jones, and you're listening to the Red Pill Radio Show, live on Alternate Current Radio. My next guest, Dr. Judy Wood, earned a PhD degree from Virginia Tech and is a former professor of mechanical engineering. She has research expertise in experimental stress analysis, structural mechanics, deformation analysis, materials characterization, and materials engineering science. Her research has involved testing materials, including complex material systems, in the area of photomechanics, or the use of optical and image analysis methods to determine physical properties of materials and measure how materials respond to forces placed on them. Her area of expertise involves interferometry. She taught graduate and undergraduate engineering classes and has authored or co-authored over 60 peer-reviewed papers in her areas of expertise. In the time since 9/11, 2001, she has applied her expertise in materials science, image analysis, and interferometry to a forensic study of over 40,000 images, hundreds of video clips, and a large volume of witness testimony pertaining to the destruction of the World Trade Center complex. Dr. Wood has conducted a comprehensive forensic investigation of what physically happened to the World Trade Center site on 9/11. And based on her analysis of the evidence she gathered, in 2001, she filed a federal key TAM case for science fraud against the contractors who contributed to the official NIST, National Institute Standards Technology Report, about the destruction of the World Trade Center. This case was filed in the U.S. Supreme Court in December of 2009. To this day, Dr. Wood's investigation is the only comprehensive forensic investigation in the public domain. It is my honor today to bring to Red Pill Radio Dr. Judy Wood. Hello, Dr. Judy. How are you this evening?
Hello, and thank you very much for having me. Thank you for tackling the truth, the facts.
Well, absolutely. And without, as you know, we've known each other for a little while now, and I think you know that I stick to the facts as best as I possibly can. And you know, I love the truth, as you say, which is the evidence, and especially what happened on 9/11. So, Dr. Judy, can you tell me about your background a little bit, as far as?
Academic or prior to that?
Let's start with prior to that a little bit, you know, how you grew up. You had told me in the past that you didn't grow up with a TV in your home, and I think that's a big reason why you came, you know, was able to see the evidence when most people didn't.
I think so, too. Yeah, I think so, too. I wasn't trained to a TV set. And instead, I, you know, went out and played with actual things, and figuring out how the world works is a very big interest. And I think that's sort of like why we're all here, is to understand the world around us. And one of the first toys I had, it was my favorite toy. I was usually getting in trouble for breaking because I was the youngest. The four kids, and there was somebody threw away a Chatty Cathy doll in the trash. Well, if it was thrown away, I couldn't get in trouble for breaking it. So I got it and took it apart to see how it worked. And would you believe it was like a record player inside?
Really?
And the string you pulled just wound the spring that turned the record to the record player.
Oh, wow.
Bright yellow. It was interesting.
That is,
it just came off its tracks. But being able to see how things work and take things apart, people who are watching TV wouldn't be doing that.
That is so true. Yeah, the TV is telling them what to believe, think, and what to wear and everything nowadays.
Right, and I don't think most people realize the influence that has. Now, there was a little bit of difference coming up to elementary school when, you know, Monday kids would talk about the movie they saw on TV last night. And I felt a little bit you know, on the outside. But I've come to appreciate that upbringing. Another fun story about Charlie the Crow, but we can talk about that one later.
Yes.
I got into, how things work and bicycles and worked at a bike shop and so forth. And I never decided ahead of time what I was going to do. I waited until I got to a fork in the road, and then I chose whatever direction. And I ended up studying engineering. And I had somebody who I literally looked up to. I asked them what they studied in college. They studied civil engineering, so that's what I was going to do. I didn't realize it wasn't experimental mechanics, which is really what I wanted, because that's what they were practicing. But I graduated with a degree in structural engineering or civil engineering, and then I went on to study engineering mechanics, which is like applied physics, how things work. It's not mechanical engineering. Mechanical engineering is how all the parts work together and designing something with a whole bunch of parts in it. But engineering mechanics is sort of like basic physics, how things work.
Okay.
And like material properties and whatnot. And from there, I went on to get a PhD in materials engineering science. The master's and the PhD were somewhat similar. It was applying in the word is interferometry.
Yes, I was having struggling.
it's interference of different types of energy, or usually in the conventional sense, it's electromagnetic energy all from the same source, but it applies to other things as well. One example of interference is, when you go on TV with a striped shirt, and it interferes with the pixel array on the TV screen, and you get this weird pattern.
Okay, yeah, I never knew that. I just learned that, something new.
Yeah, it's referred to as a moiré pattern, or like a curtain in front of a window screen. They interfere, and you get an interaction between the two. Even though it's a mechanical interference, there's also, other types of interference. So I have a degree in, a bachelor's degree in civil engineering and a master's degree in applied physics and a PhD in materials engineering science. And I also did postdoctoral work with materials characterization using optical methods, interference, mainly Moray interferometry. And went on to become a professor doing that same kind of work, applying interferometry to evaluate material properties and things.
And how long were you a professor at Clemson? How many years?
Let's see, 6 or 7 years, I forget which, something like that. But the postdoc, before that time, too, I also worked at Boeing for a short bit between degrees.
What did you do at Boeing?
I was working on a program for in the composite materials area, for bonded joints. But I've done some other contractor work on, looking at material properties and things, and materials characterization. In other words, you hand me a piece of material, what is this, and what's its strengths and weaknesses, or three or four different material systems. Tell us which is best, or tell us, what the qualities of these are to know how to manufacture something. If there's a type of way that they're manufacturing it, it could come out in different ways. And so when I looked at the World Trade Center, site, I couldn't help but see the materials characterization aspect of it.
Well, yes, and I'd like to actually go back before that. The day of, I'd like to go back to the day of 9/11, Dr. Judy, where you first heard the first report about what was going on in New York City and Washington, D.C.
I was teaching a graduate class in the evenings on Tuesdays, and so I got up a little bit late, and I had my alarm clock set just to make sure I was up by a certain time. And I had it set to kick on onto a noxious radio station, because that would get me up. So, it was still going. I had already gotten up, and I was in the other room entering grades on the computer when the thing came on. And it was the radio program, so I wasn't urgently getting up to shut it off. But it was this obnoxious talk show. And it was just really obnoxious. And I kind of heard in the background, well, those guys at the party last night must have had a good time. They made a wrong turn. One of them went and flew his airplane into the building. Yeah, okay, where's the punchline?
Yes.
Right. It was like a sick joke that they never got to the punchline. And then, oh, there's another one. He made a wrong turn into another building. And that's, I don't know if these guys were joking or what. It really was a southern accent. I don't know what show it was. So at that point, I went and accessed a TV set, and I saw what was going on, or I saw what we were supposed to be seeing, what was going on. And so I had rabbit ears. I never was into cable TV. So I flipped to different channels and tweaked my rabbit ears. And I actually sampled with my VCR, recorded segments from the various different stations. And it was all the same show. That blew me away. It was all the same show on all the channels.
Now let me ask you this, Dr. Judy. Why did you decide to video record it?
Oh, it's just it's instinct. Different people have different responses that they do when they come to an emergency situation. I've seen this. I could break them into basically five categories. And there's the one, like you come to a car wreck on the highway. And there's a bunch of people there. Somebody's going to be the organizer. You go do this, you go do that. Somebody else can deal with the body. Sometimes those are the same person, but they don't necessarily need to be. Then there's the one who gathers the equipment, flags traffic down, flags traffic around. They can't deal with the site, but they can flag traffic down or divert it around and whatnot. Then there's the data recorder. Sound familiar?
Yes.
And then there's the majority of the population falls into the last category, which is useless. But in that, there's a subcategory of people who can follow directions if they're told instructions, but they won't act on their own. And they're just stunned. But the majority are just like, the type of person that just screams, sits there and screams.
Yes.
That's a useless category. They just can't function.
Yeah, they're frozen. They just can't do anything.
So now going back to 9/11, I wasn't stopping and thinking why I was doing it. It's instinct.
Instinct. I probably would have done the same thing if I wasn't at work.
And there's during the San Francisco earthquake not too long ago, there's a video of the bridge opening up and cars, people didn't even have time to hit the brake pad, and they're going over the edge. How on earth did that guy get his camera up and film it?
Instinct, yeah.
Instinct. That he's in the right business.
Exactly.
So none of them are better or worse than the others. Just people fall into a particular pattern, and they work well together. I'm not the kind that say, go do this, go do that, the organizer type.
Right.
But you need one that to coordinate everything.
That is true. You definitely need somebody to help organize. That's definitely true. So now,
and you can't do it with like five organizers. So yeah, I just needed to record it for who knows what reason, just in case I wanted it again. And but it really hit me that just all the same show on all the channels. And don't you usually get somebody with a microphone from some network goes up and puts the camera in somebody's face. So what did you see? What did you see?
Right. Yes.
And random stuff, or somebody who just took their loved one, to the airport and dropped them off, and then they saw, whatever they're going to see. But it was all the same show.
It was, and I noticed that as well when I was watching it.
That was just bizarre. So I'm already getting suspicious. And then there's no ad breaks.
Yes, they stopped the commercials, which they very rarely ever do. I think that was the first time I can remember in my lifetime.
This is important. This is important. It's like that's what they're trying to tell you. But it really bugged me that it was all the same thing. So, okay, now I'm suspicious that somebody's pulling a fast one on us and is, pulling a trick, like War of the Worlds or whatnot. So, okay, how do you solve it? You need more data.
Yes,
to figure that out. So how can I get more data? Well, if the U.S. is under attack, there should be fighter jets over Washington, D.C.
You would think so, yeah.
And my parents live well near the Pentagon, so okay, I'll call them up and see if they can see fighter jets out there. My mom answered. She wasn't aware anything was different that day, and when I suggested she go look out to see if there were fighter jets, and she went and looked. Nope, no fighter jets. Now she was suspicious. She turned on her TV set, and yeah, no fighter jets. That was a good point. And so she was entered into this with suspicion. Now, my dad was out in the garden at the time, and his neighbor worked at the Pentagon and came home early from work, and didn't work at the Pentagon that day. Was at a meeting across town, but still came home early. Went running to my dad for comfort, all in distress, which distressed my dad. That's how he was exposed to what was going on. And so he was sort of traumatized through the neighbor's trauma.
Okay, yes, I can understand that happening, absolutely.
And somehow he had the idea that she had said, or maybe she thought she had said, you know, he thought she'd witnessed the wing of the airplane take the roof off the Pentagon.
Repeat that again, I'm sorry, what did you say?
That my dad thought that she had witnessed the wing of the airplane taking the roof off the Pentagon.
Oh, okay.
So that was vividly in his mind. It was written in stone. So that first impression really carries a long way.
Yeah, it truly does. And I remember, you know, I was at work on 9/11. Then I left and I had a class. I was going to college at the time, and I got there and all the everybody obviously was not in class at that time. They're all in the auditorium and they brought in TVs so everybody could watch it. And I had already, you know, woken up to a lot of these things like back in 1998. So when I saw it, the first thing that came to my mind was, you know, I don't believe what they tell me on the TV, first of all, Dr. Wood.
Well, how long have they had to investigate the situation?
Oh, they didn't really investigate it. They know who it was and who did it.
Yeah, when I heard that, I wondered, okay, if they know who it was, why did they let them take off in airplanes, you know, if they really knew that.
And they had all their pictures and everything they were flashing on the TV. These are the hijackers, and we have them filmed going through mm-hmm. the terminal, so why don't you stop them?
The other thing that occurred to me, okay, so after I called my parents, okay, now I was extra suspicious, but I went into campus anyway, and I ran into my graduate student on the way into the building. He said, Dr. Wood, who's Bin Laden? What's Al-Qaeda? Huh? I went on to the building and ran into some of the senior faculty. These two in particular. And they're saying, yeah, after the cold bomb, we got to take them out. We got to take them all out. I'll never forget those words. These guys mentally had in their hands their pitchforks, were ready to go after somebody.
And these were professors, your colleagues, right?
Yep. And I went into the conference room, and they're playing the building frothing up and, you know, turning to dust. And to me, it looked like, you know, somebody pulling a piece of yarn on a sweater and the whole thing comes unraveled. And wait, this is ridiculous. They're saying this is a collapse? Come on, you guys aren't buying this. That expression on my face and looked around the room with sort of a smirk on my face, like, come on, you're not falling for this, are you? You know, this doesn't make sense. And they looked at me like, what kind of a wacko is she? And immediately you get the feeling like, whoops, you know, thou shalt not talk about reality. So, okay, am I on a foreign planet? What happened? This did not make sense. I'm looking around, everyone's just soaked right into it. So I noticed how quickly the stuff went to dust. And the building is supposed to be like a quarter mile tall, and just using ballpark numbers. Well, if you drop a bowling ball off the roof, how long does it take to hit the ground? About that length of time the building's trying to froth.
Crazy the amount of time.
Well, actually, as it turns out, the real facts are that the ground shook for less time than it would take to drop a bowling ball off the roof. But anyway, I went up to my office and I made a quick calculation. And then that's when I formulated the billiard ball example. And
Let's talk about that a little bit to our listeners, exactly what that is.
Well, at first, I did these calculations, and it just made no sense what we said. You know, there's no way the building can go away that fast. 110-story building going away in like 10 seconds, you know, how fast can you clap your hands? How many times can you clap your hands? Can you clap them 110 times in 10 seconds?
I doubt it.
There is one guy who can do it, but it's a special technique of double clapping he does, but it's the Guinness Book of World Records. But other than that, you know, the average person cannot even come close to it. Another thing that came to my mind is, all right, this building is a quarter mile tall, or a little over a quarter mile tall. Lay it down horizontally on the ground. Now, you get a world record holder in the mile and have him run along the side of the building. At a quarter of a mile, let's round it to a four-minute mile. So that means it's going to be one full minute, 60 seconds. It's going to take him to run at world record pace to run the length of that building. That's, you know, so the building went away in, you know, one-sixth of that amount of time.
It's approximately between, 9 and 10 seconds, correct?
Yeah, yeah. So the building went away, you know, at a rate that was 6 times faster than the world record holder in the mile can run the length of the building. You know, approximate numbers. Hey, wait, that's amazing. Okay. So I asked one colleague, and thou shalt not question me. It was like I was a lunatic for questioning it. So
I had that same feeling. I was questioning it as well. Not the way you were, because I didn't have that the background that you had, but I knew they were lying to me.
So I need to figure out the discrepancy. You know, am I insane or are they insane? So I'm trying to find the explanation. I think that, you know, people say, oh, then that you must be insane if you're asking. No, I'm being logical and open-minded. So how do I determine that? Well, okay, let's do these calculations. Maybe I memorized the coefficient of gravity incorrectly. Check my physics book. It's just what I remembered. Oh, but maybe that's a typo and I memorized the typo. Let's look at another one and another one. Nope, they're all the same. That doesn't explain it. So I took these calculations. I did this rough setup of the billiard ball example, which is, let's say the building is severely damaged. It's missing 9 out of every 10 floors. And then, you know, each one goes splat and turns into dust, and then the next one falls down 10 stories and goes splat and turns into dust. And you go through that, it takes 31 seconds. Well, if you can do a parallel with it, pretend every 10 floors that somebody's sticking their hand out the window holding a billiard ball. And I use billiard balls because they're all the same, ignoring the cue ball, of course, but they're all the same, except different colors. You can keep track of one from the other. So let's say the blue one gets dropped from the 110th floor. The guy on the 100th floor has a red ball, and he can't let go of it until the blue one goes by.
Right.
And then let's go to the red one, and then it drops 10 stories, and first from the yellow ball, let's go of it there. And that ends up being 31 seconds.
A lot slower than the 9 or 10 seconds.
Oh, yeah. So I went to a colleague down the hall and said, I was showing these calculations for a billiard ball. And I said, is this correct? And he looked at me like, this is elementary physics. You know, are you having a senior moment? I mean, of course this is correct. But if I showed him the World Trade Center, I was a lunatic for questioning that.
And why do you think that is, Dr.?
Yeah, right there is where I saw the value of the billiard ball example. It frees people from to think. With this horror scene, it shuts off thinking. And that is a big statement right there.
That's a defense mechanism, isn't it? Trauma.
Trauma-based mind control.
Yes.
And when people are traumatized, the brain shuts down, which allows the bad guys to do whatever they want to do. Another thing that shuts down the brain is revenge. Yeah, we got to go take them out. We got to take them all out.
So they had to give us a boogeyman who did it right away.
Yeah. Yep.
So they could play on our fears. In our revenge as, you know, human beings, let's go get the guy.
Yeah, think about why dogs will fight to the death. They're in revenge mode. They don't realize what they're doing. They're just going at it.
Yes.
And so now, you know, just as an extension of that, now we have, you know, this truther movement who says, oh, George Bush did, or Dick Cheney, or somebody like that. You know, let's go after, you know, the Bush administration or whatnot. So it doesn't matter if it's Bin Laden or Bush or whatever. They still have a pitchfork in hand.
They still have a boogeyman. They have a boogeyman for everyone.
And that's what's so damaging about needing revenge.
Now, that is very, very true, because, like you said, it's, you know, when you're that mad and you want revenge, you don't think in your right mind. I mean, they have something like, what is that called? Like, if you
road rage?
Well, no, you come home and you catch your husband in bed with another woman or something, and temporary insanity, and you kill him or something.
Yep, yep. Yeah, people don't think things through when they're in revenge mode.
Right.
And then now let's look back. It was 13 years ago, almost 13 years ago. And
well,
let's
take a quick break, and we'll come back and we'll talk about it.
All right.
Okay.
All right.
You are listening to the ACR Network, Alternate Current Radio Network.
Cosmic Corner of the Universe. Ignition sequence start. 10.
Astrocade.
9.
Cancer.
8.
SSRI.
7.
Methanol.
6.
Electronic surveillance.
5.
GMO.
4.
The New World Order.
3.
Rex 84.
2.
Vaccine.
1.
Synchronicity.
Ignition.
Liftoff. We have liftoff on the Alternate Current Radio Network. Want to hear the truth from the outer recesses of the human condition on these topics and others affecting your life? This is Cosmic. I strive to find experts in their fields, bringing important information to your corner of the universe. So just stay tuned to the Alternate Current Radio Network at alternatecurrentradio.com. Look under Latest Radio Archives and scroll down to Cosmic's Corner of the Universe on the Alternate Current Radio Network.
You are listening to the Red Pill Radio Show with Ashley Jones. Find us on the web at alternatecurrentradio.com. Join our group and like us on Facebook by searching for Alternate Current Radio. If you need a mobile app, look for us on Spreaker at Spreaker.com. In addition, we can be found on Shoutcast.com, TuneIn.com, and on iTunes Podcast for downloadable episodes. Call in and join our conversation. We want to hear from every one of you. Our call-in phone number is 567-704-7851, and the passcode is 379-417-pound. Again, our phone number is 567-704-7851, and the passcode is 379-417-pound. Welcome to The Real.
Tune in to the Red Pill Radio Show with me, your host, Ashley Jones, Monday through Thursday from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Take the red pill and see how deep the rabbit hole goes. Yourself in the current, Alternate Current Radio Network. Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Ashley Jones, and this is the Red Pill Radio Show. And I'm having a fabulous discussion with Dr. Wood. She wrote the book, Where Do the Towers Go? Evidence of Free Energy Technology on 9/11. You can find her book and her website, wheredidthetowersgo.com. And she also has another website called drjudywood.com that you can go, and there's loads of information there, but I implore you, get the book, because you really need to read the book. And as I always say, Dr. Judy, it's the most important book since the Bible. Isn't that correct?
Yep, that's what you said. I think you're the original one to state that.
I was the original one, and you never know where that ends up.
Really? And the regular website, drjudywood.com, it's not real well organized. I put stuff up there while I was working on my federal case as well as the book, because I learned that dead people keep secrets. I didn't want to be one of those, so I wasn't going to keep secrets. So I put my stuff out on the web. So
it's always the best to put it out in the light.
Oh. But it wasn't organized very well. So the book, it has the material organized well, plus it has additional information.
Well, just let me tell the listeners this. When you get the book, it's like getting a college textbook. A college textbook will cost you around $300 to $400 for a brand new one. You can get her book for a lot cheaper than that. I think is it $45, Dr. Judy?
Yeah. Yep, somewhere in there.
It's like around $45 or $50. It's the best money you'll ever spend, I promise you. So, Dr. Judy, getting back to what we were discussing before the break, we were talking about how people lose their mind during the revenge factor and the fear factor. They're easily controlled. So we were just discussing that. So continue what your thought was.
So we noticed this other pattern that comes to be that, every 9/11, we're just bombarded with stuff, more stuff that reminds us of 9/11. I call it a booster shot of the original event. To put people back in that same mode.
I call it 9/11 terrorism season.
Yep, and it ramps up, and then you have all this stuff that comes out. And somebody I spoke with today, don't want to identify who they are, but they were in really bad shape, stressed out. And about all the stuff going on, and then I explained to them what this was, and you could see the moment it computed, he suddenly had this relief on his face, and it just felt so much more at ease understanding that you have all of this stuff in the media, and so they can't use Al Qaeda anymore. That name doesn't work, so they have a new name for it.
Yes.
I don't pay attention to news, so I don't.
They had to go. Yes, they had to go to ISIS. Yes, the ISIS.
Right. But it's still, substitute bin Laden for this or that. It's just another name for, here's the boogeyman.
Exactly.
The universal boogeyman. But so this will continue on and different ways of ramping it up. It's called a booster shot of the initial event. And as long as you realize that this is about shutting off your ability to think, feel free to ignore the junk. The media isn't now what it used to be. It used to be journalists would do their work. They would go out and investigate something and then report on what they found. That isn't the case anymore. And the best example I can think of in recent times is this Malaysian Airlines 370. I called it the Where's Waldo scavenger hunt. Every day, okay, it went east. Now, maybe it went north the next day. Maybe it went west. Oh, maybe it went south.
Yeah, that was so annoying. I counted, Dr. Judy. It was on the news every night for almost 3 months.
So what were they trying to, stir people up for? Don't they know how to do any kind of research anymore? And report on what they've learned. I had all sorts of emails from people saying, could this be, the weapon that did in the towers? Could that have done an airplane? So wait a minute, hold your horses. I first need to know, was there such an airplane? Did it take off? And then after it took off, if it did, which direction was it headed in? I can't get those questions answered, so I'm done.
Right. That was my first thought is, does an airplane even exist? Prove it to me. You know, there's no proof of that. I called it the Where's Waldo thing.
Right. So I'm not going to argue that people are missing, but what happens to people is a different question.
Exactly.
But it's like, look to the left, look to the right. Don't they have any real information other than putting out news stories of speculation every day? Speculation and theorizing and hypothesizing do not solve real problems.
No, they never have and never will. That's why you can't take that to a court of law and prosecute somebody.
There are theories about speculation and suspicion. Now, you first have to determine what happened before
Absolutely.
You can determine how it happened. You have to determine what it is that happened.
Absolutely. And, you know, getting back to that, it's like you were just saying, it's very important to find out what happened. And the example you give right away in your book is you first, if they're claiming that person was shot with a gun, you better find a bullet in the body.
Well, bullet hole. If you're going to, take it to court and the body doesn't have a bullet hole in it, you don't have a case.
You have no case.
And so you need to first determine what happened before you can say how it happened or who done it or anything else. Determine what, what's the problem you're trying to solve. I jokingly say, is the answer 27 the correct answer?
Right. The answer is, you're like the mighty Karnak, right? The answer is 27.
Right. But you need to know what the question is.
Absolutely.
It's right or wrong.
Yeah. You have to know what the question is first.
And the first basic course in engineering is engineering statics. And in that, it's kind of like a boot camp. That's how it was when I took it, and I thought that was great. It disciplines you to first define the problem you're going to solve. What is the problem? What are you being asked for? What are you given? Draw a line across the page. What are you going to find? Draw a line across the page. Now, what is the steps you're using to solve it? And I remember at first, the problems were easy, and the students would say, well, this is boring, and they want to skip. Do this and get in the habit of doing it, and for the rest of your life, problems will be a lot easier to solve. And they would get pretty frustrated with it, and they'd go home, and they'd want to watch TV. So here they are filling out the busy work, they think, on their paper, and then once they've filled it out, they go, well, this is easy to solve, and they go ahead and solve it.
So it's sort of like learning the times tables when you're young.
Yeah, it's just there, and that makes it easy. So when you get in this habit of first define the problem before you can solve it, you got to know where you're going. Like, if you get in your car to drive someplace, you want to know where you're going to go first.
Well, yes.
You're going around circles.
Usually, yeah.
In the right direction.
A destination is good to have.
Yep, so that's important. Now, what's the harm in starting out with whodunit?
Well, you got to find out what happened first.
Oh, Ashley is suspicious. Oh, I think she must have done it. Let's go prosecute her now. Let's see. What can we find on her? What evidence to prove whatever we think? You aren't solving the real problem. You're solving an imagined problem. And actually, as for cover-ups, that is the easiest tool that is used in cover-ups.
Oh, absolutely, yes. And we're going to cover the cover-up in full. Probably in, I'd say, around the second hour, Dr. Rudy. But let's get back into
Just touch on this a little bit about how the cover-ups work. See, if you skip determining what the problem is and then jump to how it was done.
Yes.
You haven't defined what it was that was done. The only way you can say how it was done was to assume what it was. So you're solving an imagined problem, not a real problem.
And you know what they say when you assume, right?
It's an imaginary problem.
Yeah, you make an ass out of you and me, they say, right?
So that's why it's so important to first determine what happened.
Absolutely.
And that otherwise it's just bias and you're cherry picking data to support some fantasy that you've thought of. So how cover-ups work is to get people to dive into how it was done, so they're all solving an assumed problem. You can never, ever, ever solve the real problem by solving an imagined problem.
That is so true. And isn't it true, like, the first thing that happens is, say it's like a murder victim. Somebody finds a murder victim. They call the police. What's the first thing they do when the police get there? They section off the crime scene, don't they? To protect the evidence so they can examine it later to find out what happened, how the person was murdered.
Right, to determine what happened. But this issue for easy ways to cover things up is to get people to assume what happened. Then you don't need to cover anything up.
So true.
Because nobody's looking at it. They're looking at wherever you've led them to look at instead of looking at really what happened.
Oh, exactly. Yes, definitely. That is so true. We're going to cover that in great detail, the cover-up, because it's very important.
Right, but that's how it's done. That's why that step of first defining what to solve is important. And after you determine what happened, you look at for example, if the building was destroyed, you look at the destructive mechanism. After you've determined what happened, it will help you understand the destructive mechanism.
Well, absolutely, yes. And so let's get back to their official story is that 19 Arabs with box cutters commandeered three planes. Two of them supposedly smashed into the World Trade Center, and a third one into the Pentagon. Actually, it was four planes, they say. Another one in a field in Pennsylvania. So that's theory number one. Theory number two was...
That's their story.
It's a story, yeah. It's like watching a Die Hard movie.
Okay.
It really is. It's like watching a Die Hard movie.
And then you're given it like a false choice. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, then you're given a false choice, which would be like thermite, nanothermite, or, you know, something like that, you know.
Right. And if people don't like that false choice, then you got to give them another one.
Mini nukes and stuff like that, the third choice. And they just keep coming up with choices, and they keep you running around. And
so, you know, as I say, you know, if you don't like the lie behind door number one, you know, 19 bad guys with box cutters, oh, we'll show you the lie behind door number two. Thermite. Well, once you start smelling that one, that's a good. Then they'll show you the lie behind door number three, nukes. And then if that one doesn't work for you, oh, we'll show you the lie behind door number four. Whatever it's doing is keeping your attention looking behind those doors rather than turning around looking at the wide open field of evidence right behind you.
We call that disinfo.
But it's very distracting. And if you have a good-looking babe lure you into one of those rooms or, Boy Scouts lure you into one of those rooms, that works in our culture.
Oh, like so, a good-looking babe. It's sort of like The Matrix, the woman in the red dress, right?
The people say, oh, that's a good place to go. And they said, you know, why do they use babes to sell cars?
Well, yeah, because they're just looking at the babe instead of the price of the car.
Yep. And so the same kind of thing. So it's important to start with the evidence, but if you're busy getting funneled into various, you know, theories or stories, you're not looking at what happened.
Absolutely. So let's start with the official government story that NIST committed fraud because they're part of the cover-up as well. And you took this to the Supreme Court, a Keith Tam case, and we'll get into that.
The biggest issue I have with NIST, amongst other things, is that they were mandated by Congress to determine why and how the towers, quote, collapsed.
Yes.
And they didn't do that. And actually, I brought up this one diagram they had in the report that shows this tipping top of Tower 2. I said, that violates the laws of physics. If you have a rigid body that tips over and stops tipping. And, you know, it turns out that proves it wasn't a rigid body. But and I said, it violates the laws of physics. And they answered me on that saying, oh, no, it doesn't. Our analysis doesn't violate the laws of physics because we didn't analyze the collapse.
That's amazing. Repeat that, please.
They said that, you know, the collapse analysis or whatever doesn't violate the laws of physics because they didn't analyze the collapse. They only analyzed the building while it was still standing. So while it was still standing, it obeyed the laws of physics.
Well, of course it's going to while it's still standing.
And what they did was generate or have their contractors generate a possible hypothetical scenario. In other words, an imaginary problem. And that's what they produced.
Yes, an imaginary problem. So let's start with NIST's whatever they came up with, whatever Fantasyland story they came up with. They say it was a pancake collapse, Dr. Judy.
Oh, I don't know if they changed that one, I think, later on.
I think you're right. They did change that later on.
It's after my billiard ball thing came out, which, you know, the billiard ball thing, instead of every 10 floors, it was, you know, every, I did that as well as every floor. You go floor by floor by floor by floor, that's over 100 seconds.
Yeah, but here's the thing, but obviously it wasn't a collapse, because if the building collapsed, I believe it was 500 million.
500,000 tons. Yeah, this is, you know, very simply put, for those who are listening that, you know, would like to know what, why it wasn't a collapse, why the buildings didn't slam to the ground. They didn't burn up, nor they slammed to the ground. Most of the building turned into dust in midair.
And you can see that with your own eyes.
Yeah, you see it turning into dust. And that was my biggest problem on day one, is this building looks like it's frothing up into, you know, like an Alka-Seltzer tablet, effervescing. And if it had slammed to the ground, boom, it'd be big seismic signal. Let's go look at the seismic charts. Nope. Didn't happen. It was much smaller, and not only that, the signal did not travel through the Earth. Remember, we're taught about S and P waves that they rise at different rates to the seismic station?
Yes.
And that lag time, at first the P wave comes, then the S wave comes, the shear wave, that tells you about how far away the epicenter is because of the different rates of travel through the Earth. And there's also a surface wave. Well, as it turns out, when the World Trade Center towers went away, there was no detectable S or P wave. In other words, you know, you hit a rock with a hammer, it rings like a tuning fork. That didn't happen.
Right. Now, how can that be if the building supposedly collapsed, all the concrete and steel smashed to the ground?
It couldn't have slammed to the ground and have that day. And this is not just one recording station, but all the recording stations in the area. Now, these recording stations, Building 7 was even more dramatic. But what was recorded was the surface wave. Why would you get a surface wave? Well, if you, like, let's say King Kong reached over and picked up those towers and chucked them up into space, you know, just took the weight off the ground, that ground is recovering like you're getting off your mattress in the morning.
That's true. Like there's like an indentation in your mattress and then it eventually goes back to normal.
Two 500,000-ton buildings going away, it's going to create a surface wave. But those were not waves that went through the Earth, like S and P waves. And the surface wave for Building 7 was a 0.6. That's like a jackhammer.
And that's like the equivalent. You couldn't even hear it. Like, you didn't even hear it. You could hear the audible people speaking when Building 7 went away, but you couldn't hear the building go away. It was so strange.
Right. Let me read a quote by one of the first responders, Michael Ober. He said, "I don't remember the sound of the building hitting the ground. Somebody told me that it was measured on the Richter scale. I don't know how true that is. If the building's hitting the ground that hard, how do I not remember the sound of it?"
That says it all right there. That's from a first responder.
And Building 2 went away while Building 1 was still standing. Some of the firefighters who came out of Building 1, they thought they came out in the wrong direction because they thought a building was supposed to be there and there wasn't a building there. They were disoriented. They didn't know that Tower 2 had gone away.
Exactly. And we're going to cover that in the next minute or so. But I'd like to talk about the bathtub not being destroyed.
Okay. That's another thing. If the buildings had slammed to the ground, something a lot of people don't realize is that the towers were built on bedrock 70, that's 7 times 10, 70 feet below the water table in the Hudson River. So they built this dike around the base of the building. We call it the bathtub. It's sort of like the reverse of a bathtub. It keeps the water out. So they could build the building on bedrock. And so there's like 7 big stories that go down underground, water's kept out. So when if you're going to smash those buildings to the ground, you're surely going to break the dike. Didn't happen. Not only that there's a little segment of a 8-story building, Building 6, that remained afterwards, and they didn't want to use dynamite on it because they were afraid of damaging the bathtub wall. Instead, they used cranes and pulled it down.
And didn't the backhoes cause more damage than the towers going away?
Yep. The bathtub wall did get damaged, but not from the towers dropping on it. It was from the earth-moving equipment they brought in afterwards. And as soon as they realized that, there was like a big crack opening up in Liberty Street and the wall was being pushed in, they developed some new rules that no big mega crane could be within X number of feet of another mega crane. They had to be on wooden platforms that distribute out the weight. And there's a lot of different rules and monitoring that went into place at that time. So it's clear that the buildings had not slammed to the ground.
And I remember going to, they called it Ground Zero. And in particular, where the towers once stood, they called that area the pit. And I went there and I looked at it.
The pile.
Well, it was after the pile was taken away.
Oh.
It was just the bathtub was left. And they called that the pit. And I looked at it with my own eyes and there was very little damage.
Somebody who was reading my book emailed me and accidentally referred to it as the skateboard park.
Well, yeah, it was.
This nice, cement walls all over the place.
It did. It kind of did look like that. So, we're going to go to a quick break.
Okay.
Judy, when we come back,
all right.
We're going to talk about the so-called jump. We'll talk about the.
There was one other thing that proves that buildings didn't slam the ground. You'd have a big pile of stuff left over.
Oh, yeah, we're going to talk about that as well.
Didn't happen. Okay.
When we come back from the break.
You are listening to the ACR Network.
You are listening to the ACR Network.
The Red Pill Radio Show with Ashley Jones. Find us on the web at alternatecurrentradio.com. Join our group and like us on Facebook by searching for Alternate Current Radio. If you need a mobile app, look for us on Spreaker at Spreaker.com. In addition, we can be found on Shoutcast.com, TuneIn.com, and on iTunes Podcast for downloadable episodes. Call in and join our conversation. We want to hear from every one of you. Our call-in phone number is 567-704-7851, and the passcode is 379-417-pound. Again, our phone number is 567-704-7851, and the passcode is 379-417-pound. Welcome to The Real.
Tune in to the Red Pill Radio Show with me, your host, Ashley Jones, Monday through Thursday from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Take the red pill and see how deep the rabbit hole goes. Immerse yourself in the current, Alternate Current Radio Network.
HeavyCoverInc.com. Everything you need, from your water filters and storage to military and tactical headwear and firearm accessories. Whether it's that bug-out bag or anything you would want to have inside it, Heavy Cover Inc. has the reliable, high-quality items you are going to need. With standard, express, and even international shipping, you can have everything you need within days from ordering. When I started hoping for the best, but planning for the worst, my first stop was HeavyCoverInc.com. Survival kits, cover from the elements, outdoor and prep gear of all kinds. Check out Heavy Cover. You'll be glad you did.
Welcome back, everyone. Yes. I'm your host, Ashley Jones, and you're listening to the Red Pill Radio Show, live on alternatecurrentradio.com. And I'm having a fascinating conversation with Dr. Judy Wood of wheredothetowersgo.com and drjudywood.com. And we were just discussing, before we went to the break, about the bathtub and not being destroyed. Now, at this time, I'd like to play a clip. And it's called Stairway B, The Survivors. And what this clip is about is, I believe it was 14 first responders.
That 13 first responders and one civilian. They didn't leave her behind.
Okay, 13 first responders and one civilian that were trapped on the second, third, and fourth floor.
Mm-hmm. So I heard this very, very loud noise above me. It was just a tremendous roar. And it was above, and it sounded like it was coming towards you, and then the wind, a very, very fierce wind, and my helmet started lifting me up off the ground, and so that's when I crouched down. The next thing I just crouched down. I got to the corner of the staircase by the railing, and I just got as small as I could possibly get. You know, because I'm not a big guy to begin with, so fortunately I'm not. So I got in a, and I literally, well, I guess the best way to describe it, I tried to crawl into my fire helmet. That's what I wanted to do, just to protect myself. And I wasn't sure what was going on. I thought the building might be coming down, and I figured, okay, this could be it, you know. I mean, and I was a little angry. I said, why me? Why, you know, I'm beautiful. I'm going to die in the World Trade Center on a beautiful summer morning. It's like a little denial and disbelief sets in. And so then I started getting hit with stuff. You know, it was just debris was hitting me. And it went dark. And then the next thing was just total silence. Nothing. No wind. No noise, no light, nothing. And then I started hearing noises. I started hearing, like, moaning, and guys were starting to communicate, yell out. These were the guys that I was trapped with. They're calling out, who's there, you guys are right, blah, 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 and this kind of thing. And I realized there was other people. I wasn't alone, you know. Because when you're alone in a situation like that, you talk about, like, existential isolation. It's like, and then when you find out you're with other people, it makes you feel a lot better. Even though you know you're in a very bad situation, at least there's other people. But then the strangest thing happened. This beam of sunlight came right in on us, like about 8 inches long, but it was clearly sunlight. It was all dirty and full of debris. It was like, it looked like pepper was floating around in it, sort of. But it was sunlight, and I'm like amazed now. 110 story building above us, and I'm looking up at the sun.
Every time a floor hit another floor, it would not only make.
Welcome back, everyone. I hope you enjoyed that clip. It's a very important clip. First thing I heard in that clip, Dr. Judy, was, I forget who the firefighter was. I forget his name. You probably know his name.
Mickey Cross.
He tried to crawl under his helmet, and then he was lifted up from a wind, almost, he felt. I thought that was very interesting.
There's another one of them in that group that said he was blown down six stories. These are stairwells where you stop at each landing, you turn, you go down some more, and you turn, So it was, thumpity, 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 12 different flights of stairs down. It doesn't seem like somebody would be blown down, but lifted down. And then we have the story of the surfer.
Yes, I was just going to mention that. She said she was picked up by the hand of God or something, or an angel.
That's a different one. That was another
different one.
This one is it was on the 22nd floor. And then, the building around them didn't survive, but he did. He just floated down and landed on top of Stairway B, on top of where those guys were, and woke up there.
Right, so we heard in that clip also that, everything was raining down, the air was looked like pepper, he said, right?
Yep.
He thought he was going to die.
He's buried under 106 stories of building. There's no way they could excavate him out before they died.
Right, and what the listeners have to understand, he was on the second or third floor at the most. That's like you said,
fourth floor was the highest point in that little they had second, third, and fourth floor of that little cavity they're in, or the little capsule. And he assumed that the rest was just building on top of him because there's no sunlight coming in because there's a total blackout.
Right, but instead of him getting crushed with a big piece of concrete and not being able to see his family again, he looked up and saw sunlight.
Yeah, and then when the dust went away, that was the dust blocking out the sun. When the dust went away, he looked up and saw blue sky. And then all of them walked out on their own.
Exactly. And I'm looking at it in your book right now, Stairwell B.
Yeah.
And I remember from listening to the interviews afterwards, because they did a lot of interviews, and they were talking to one of the first responders, and they said they heard somebody talking on the radio.
Oh, let me go ahead and read that. It was Jay Jonas that I looked and said, "Guys, there used to be 106 floors above us, and now I'm seeing sunshine. There's nothing above us. That big building doesn't exist." And he later said, "These are the biggest office buildings in the world. I didn't see one desk, one chair, one phone, nothing." And then James McGlynn said, on the Handy Talks, we kept telling them, "Stairwell B." I remember everyone had the same exasperation I did. He must have told them 100 times, B stairwell, second, third, fourth floor, and the North Tower. B stairway, second, third, fourth floor, North Tower, B stairway, North Tower. Where are you? North Tower, stairway B, second, third, and fourth floor. And you could hear they didn't understand where we were. And I kept going, "My God, aren't you guys listening?" And then over the walkie-talkie, he said, "Where's the North Tower?"
That was amazing when I heard that clip.
Yeah, he probably thought that these voices were from the beyond because the people on the outside didn't see any building left. Reversely, there was no building left.
Yeah, just a couple of aluminum cladding pieces standing up. That's about it, right?
Yeah. Well, and stairway B up to the fourth floor.
And stairwell, let's just say if it was, theory number two, there was explosives. Could those people have survived in stairway B?
Nope. Well, they wouldn't have survived. They wouldn't have dismembered.
Yeah, they never would have seen them probably again.
And they would have been crushed from the debris coming down.
Yeah, so, I mean, people just say, I heard somebody say, "Well, that's just a miracle." Well, you can say it that, or maybe it was because the majority of the building turned to dust, and dust doesn't crush you.
And another piece of evidence that is consistent with the building turning to dust is if this whole building was getting crushed down and it went away in like 10 seconds or, 9.5 seconds, the ground was shook for 8. But I'm moving it up to cover freefall gravity speed. But in order to mash all that building down to the ground in that amount of time, the stuff inside the building has to be squirting out sideways at greater than Mach 1, about halfway down, and like Mach 2 at the bottom. So therefore, every single building right around that should look like it was machine gun fired. And we would have heard a crack from the breaking the sound barrier.
That is very, very true.
But the adjacent buildings were not sandblasted or machine gun fired looking.
No, they weren't at all. The only thing I can see that happened to the adjacent building was when the towers unraveled like a sweater. Some of the beams were thrust outward.
But just a few.
Yeah, just a few.
And
that was
stabbed into some adjacent buildings. Now there's that dome on the top of one of the buildings that didn't get dinged up. You'd think, on top of WFC-3.
Right.
Or WFC-2. That's a 44-story building. And the towers are 110 stories tall.
I think people don't realize the magnitude of what we're talking about. When you talk about 110 stories tall, and I mean,
right, the stuff that the few beams that went out like spears and stabbed into some adjacent buildings, none of them are really above the 18th floor of adjacent buildings.
Right.
So it's up above there. You don't have stab wounds in the building. The 44-story WFC-2 building. That dome, nice smooth dome on the top, still pristine.
Still pristine. I saw it with my own eyes when I went to New York City back in 2008. That was the last time I visited.
And that atrium where they have this nice garden, a winter garden, has these big palm trees in there. Those are the same palm trees. They didn't get smashed.
No, they didn't. And then the other thing, I'm looking at the picture in your book right now. When the first responders first showed up, for the so-called the fire, I guess, and the so-called plane hitting.
Which page are you looking at?
Oh, my gosh. I forget exactly which page it was, but I was looking at it earlier. I've been going through it as we're going through. But anyway, there's an ambulance parked in front.
The famous ambulance picture.
Yeah, the ambulance parked in front, and the towers are just not there anymore. And there was, I guess what happened was they pulled up, parked the ambulance there, and then when the towers went away, the ambulance was still there and it wasn't crushed.
Towering over the remains.
Yes. There's a little bit of dust on the ambulance. That was it.
The door may be ajar, but it doesn't look clobbered.
No, not at all. Now, if these buildings are smashing to the ground, there's no way that ambulance could survive, could it?
Yeah, well, yeah, why doesn't it get clobbered by anything?
Exactly. Because turned to dust where they stood.
There's one on the page, one of them was on page 174. And you see a little blob of stuff behind the ambulance. That little blob is no more than a couple of stories tall. Well, you know, you get the top of stairwell B is fourth floor up, but you don't have much, to the left and to the right of that. But this is a 110-story building. You just have one, little stub of the stairway left.
I know, and it's amazing. It's really amazing. And then the other thing,
Where's the steel? You see a first responder in the foreground. You see some aluminum cladding, but where's the steel?
Yeah, where's the steel? And
there was some, but there wasn't nearly what there should have been.
I would say that 90% of the building went away, close to it.
You know what? You're consistent with the surface wave measurement. That's what they calculate the Richter scale reading from.
Uh-huh.
If you dustified, we have a new process. We need a new word to describe it. And that's the most scientific way of dealing with this. If you dustified everything above the 20th floor and then dropped the same footprint of the building, just dropped that 20-story chunk to the ground, you would get approximately the seismic signal.
So it lines up then?
Yep.
It does. And also,
and you also don't get stab wounds much above that story either.
No, you don't. Plus, also going through your book, I was reading the part where it talks about the World Trade Center pile in relation to the Seattle King Dome pile, and that just doesn't add up. I mean, you look at that. Explain about that, Dr. Judy.
The King Dome is just this concrete ring where the stairs were, and it had a real thin kind of dome over it. And it's basically hollow inside. But when they blew that up, it made equal or more of a seismic signal than the tower. It was the same as building one, but greater than building two. And it was like, you know, 30 feet tall pile of stuff and big chunks. You see a picture of people walking around. They're like little specks. And the junk is, you know, significantly larger than the people.
Yeah, you can see a significant difference between the World Trade Center complex and the King Dome.
Oh, another thing that this one really grabbed me is in the newspaper it said, "Wow, you're still downtown with dust for almost 20 minutes."
Oh, in Seattle?
Yeah.
Well,
they blew up the King Dome. Not almost, you know,
weeks.
20 months.
It looked like, I remember seeing the scenes afterwards after the towers went away. It looked like they were walking on the moon. There was so much dust, like all over lower Manhattan.
I talked to this one first responder and said, "Didn't you notice something missing, like a building?" And the guy said, "We didn't know where we were. Everything is the same color. And we couldn't see any of our landmarks, you know, to know where we were." And until he said that, it just hadn't occurred to me. Wait a minute, yeah. It's like they're walking on the moon. They don't know up from down. They don't know, you know, north, south, and it would take them a while to get their bearings.
Well, absolutely, yeah.
It doesn't look like what you're familiar with.
Yeah, they were definitely, you know, all the dust flying around, and it was like pitch black, you know, for quite a while there, too. They couldn't really even see, and they got all the dust in their eyes and their mouth. I remember seeing people take the water and just pour it on their head and just clean the dust off.
And for those, you know, I have had some detractors that the dust didn't go up. Well, that's what blocked out the sunlight.
Well, exactly, and I was actually just going to talk about that as far as if you look in your book about the Seattle King Dome, when they controlled demolition to take it down the King Dome,
it didn't block out sunlight. It just went poof along the ground.
Well, yeah, it only rose as high as the height of the building as well. Isn't that correct, Dr. Judy?
Yeah, and I've got pictures of several controlled demolition sites, and it's pretty consistent that the dust really doesn't go much above the original building. And the reason for that is what they do in bigger controlled demolition, they slice and dice the building and slam the chunks to the ground. And when they hit the ground is when they're broken up. By concrete would be, you have some dust that stood out. But what we had at the World Trade Center was the parts turned into dust in mid-flight, hitting nothing but air. So it is not kinetic energy. That's not the destructive mechanism. Kinetic energy would be like, you know, hitting it with a hammer or a rock or a wrecking ball or a missile or, you know, something with speed hitting something, slamming into something. And with nothing but air, how is the material falling and turning into dust?
Right, and then the other thing I noticed by reading your book and just watching it on TV was quite a bit of it went into the atmosphere. The dust rose into the atmosphere.
Oh, yeah, it went up and up and up.
Yeah, it went up and up.
They actually found some in Delaware, Maryland, Pennsylvania, New York, upstate New York, New Jersey, of course. Quite a bit of dust.
Now, how small would those particles have to be, Dr. Wood, for them to be travel that far?
It isn't so much the smallness of it. It definitely is smaller than regular controlled demolitions. But what we had here was even smaller yet. It's smaller than you could do with any kind of kinetic energy. You know, if you took a hammer and take some material and beat it against a rock with a hammer, bang, 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 you know, you get some powder coming out of it. That powder is very coarse compared to what was measured. And the stuff was just turning it, breaking down, you know, more and more and more and more, till it was the size of about 1/100th of the size of red blood cells, or on the order of the size of DNA.
That's amazing. And there's no explosive in the world that can do that.
Right. No kinetic energy can do that.
Right. No kinetic energy can do that.
And we didn't, you know, if you had kinetic energy, if that had been a destructive mechanism, you would have seen the action on the seismic charts. I'm not saying there was no seismic activity. It was a surface wave, but there was no detectable S and P waves.
And that just doesn't add up with a 500,000-ton
building slamming the ground.
Slamming to the ground.
Right, so it means it didn't. So that's one of the things consistent with it turning dust in midair.
Well, we're going to play this clip right now that Peter Jennings, and he's talking with George Stephanopoulos. And poor George is trying to give his best explanation of what...
This guy is there to tell the world what's going on there, and this is the best he can do. Let's feel sorry for him.
I'm sorry, Peter, I didn't get the question.
Okay, I apologize. Jackie Judd and several other people keep asking us, when you look at where the towers used to stand, there is surprisingly so little rubble. Where did all the rubble go?
It's a very good question, Peter, and I have asked some people who've been doing some of the rescue and recovery work this morning. If you look behind me, you can see the very remains, the skeletal remains of the World Trade Center. And one volunteer, Robert Gerlinski, explained to me the reason there's so little rubble is that all of it simply fell down into the ground and was pulverized, evaporated.
Yeah, so Dr. Judy, poor George.
That's the best description he could give. He's there to tell the whole world what's going on, and that's the best he can do. He's been asking around. That's the best story he's been given, that the buildings, fell down on the ground, were pulverized, evaporated. But that doesn't mean the buildings were evaporated. That's just the best description he can give at that time, because he's struggling, because he's never seen anything like this before. Where is the building? Where'd it go? And actually, that particular newscast, I heard live when it happened. It was about 24 hours after the big event. It was on the 12th. And that's partly what inspired the title of my book. Where did all the rubble go?
That's amazing. That's what that helps you for the title of the book, inspiration. That's amazing. I didn't know that.
I use in the book towers just to be more, identifiable as connected to the World Trade Center. But there's one building that few people realize, is weird or even talk about, is Building 4, where the main body of Building 4 just went missing. You'd almost sweep up what was left. Not quite, but it essentially was gone. Some of it punched through the ground a little bit, and there's a mall directly under there. And I have a picture from that, the first story below ground level. You can see it's punched out at the end of the hallway a little bit. But then a story or two below that is where the parking garage was, and there's no damage. There's maybe some more dust in there, but the lights are on.
I saw that in your book. I was amazed. Now, how can that be, if the building slammed to the ground, how can that be that the underground parking garage and the mall underneath would have very little damage? It was mostly, dust damage.
And there's a, TV broadcast. This is the first images from Ground Zero going underground. They're looking for survivors. And then someone says, anyone down there? You hear this big echo. That's not a crushed in basement, parking garage. That's an empty parking garage with that kind of echo. It's an echo chamber. If something's irregular, it muffles the sound, doesn't echo it. Anyone there?
It's actually quite amazing when you look in your book, and your book is filled with so many of the best pictures. I mean, the cover of your book, Dr. Judy, I believe you call that the bubbler.
Reminiscent of a Midwestern drinking fountain that's referred to as a bubbler. It's just always shooting water up and out a fountain.
And that's where, and they can go to your website and actually see that picture, can't they?
Yeah, if you go to drjudywood.com, that's drjudywood.com, and then /WTC. That's sort of a Cliff Notes page of little bits and pieces of a lot of different categories. And you can jump up and down the page, you know, and look at different issues.
All right, at this time, we're going to go to a break, but when we come back, we're going to open up the phone lines. So if you have any questions for Dr. Judy.
I'll give the number.
Judy Wood, the number is 567-704-7851. Again, the number is 567-704-7851, passcode 379-417. So please call in with your questions.
You are listening to the ACR Network, Alternate Current Radio Network.
Corner of the universe. Ignition sequence start. 10.
Aspartame.
9.
Cancer.
8.
SSRI.
7.
Methanol.
6.
Electronic surveillance.
5.
GMO.
4.
The New World Order.
3.
Rex. 84.
2.
Vaccine.
1.
Synchronicity.
Ignition.
Liftoff. We have liftoff on the Alternate Current Radio Network. Want to hear the truth from the outer recesses of the human condition on these topics and others affecting your life? This is Cosmic. I strive to find experts in their fields, bringing important information to your corner of the universe. So just stay tuned to the Alternate Current Radio Network at alternatecurrentradio.com. Look under Latest Radio Archives and scroll down to Cosmic's Corner of the Universe on the Alternate Current Radio Network.
You are listening to the Red Pill Radio Show with Ashley Jones. Find us on the web at alternatecurrentradio.com. Join our group and like us on Facebook by searching for Alternate Current Radio. If you need a mobile app, look for us on Spreaker at Spreaker.com. In addition, we can be found on Shoutcast.com, TuneIn.com, and on iTunes Podcast for downloadable episodes. Call in and join our conversation. We want to hear from every one of you. Our call-in phone number is 567-704-7851, and the passcode is 379-417-pound. Again, our phone number is 567-704-7851, and the passcode is 379-417-pound. Welcome to The Real.
Tune in to the Red Pill Radio Show with me, your host, Ashley Jones, Monday through Thursday from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Take the red pill and see how deep the rabbit hole goes.
You are listening to the ACR Network.
Welcome back, everyone. I'm your host, Ashley Jones, and this is the Red Pill Radio Show. And I'm having a fabulous discussion with Dr. Judy Wood. I hope you're all enjoying this and taking notes. So before we left for the break, Dr. Judy, we were discussing, we played that clip of George Stephanopoulos with Peter Jennings, and they're all asking what happened to the debris of the towers when they went away. So I'd like to continue with that thought. If you don't mind, Dr. Judy.
I was delighted when I first heard that. Like, oh, good, somebody's finally asking the question that I've been asking. And I got excited, but that was the last time I heard that question asked. It was the first and the last. And, doesn't anyone else wonder, where'd all the rubble go? And Peter Jennings had described Jackie Judd and several others have been asking this question. And so it wasn't, just one or two people who noticed it. It was quite a few people, but when the trauma started setting in, I think people forgot to keep asking that question, and it was just scooched out of the question box.
Went down the memory hole, didn't it?
Yep.
And something like that's very important, and it always, that's why it's important to record things.
Yep.
Or if you find YouTube video, you need to upload it to your computer so they can't take it off YouTube. And they do that a lot to try to hide the evidence.
Or it just everything gets so stirred up that you also forget how to be perceptive as to what's really there. In that those recordings that I made, there was one particular one I'm was delighted that I had saved that was just before the second tower got its hole. That this guy, you know, called in to say what he saw going on there, and he said. He said, oh, there's a building just exploded and the pieces of beams were flying out. He goes, oh, wait. You got to turn up the radio in the background. Oh, that was an airplane. He said, oh, I just saw pieces of airplane wing coming out of the building. The guy did not realize the power of suggestions had affected him. It's right there recorded. He first says this steel beams from the building. And then he said, wait. And he turns up his radio in the background. It tells him it was an airplane hit the building. And then suddenly he changes his story to seeing a piece of airplane coming out of the building.
So they just follow listening to the radio. The radio tells the truth,
yeah,
right?
It's the reason why people can recover from strokes or brain injury, because they're very good at morphing into what's around them. They don't realize that's what they're doing.
No, they don't. They don't at all.
And it's interesting the how people perceive things and recall things. Quite interesting. There's another page that you were looking for. It's 282.
Oh, thank you. Yes, 282.
About halfway down. There was smoke. There was debris. There was everything flying around.
So now we're going to switch gears. We're going to talk about the toasted cars and the weird fires.
What I mean by toasted cars is it's toast. It's history. It's like it's total. It's destroyed. It doesn't imply anything to do with cause. It's just it's toast. If something got toasted, something was destroyed. But it's not in any describable way of anything I've seen before. It's just something happened to this. It messed it up.
Right.
So I coined the word. I tend to use words that are common, so it's not awkward to use. But I have a particular vocabulary, and I would assign meanings to things. So yeah, that's what toast means.
Okay. So yeah, and I think I remember telling you the other night we were talking offline, and I was telling you my memories of 9/11 and listening to it, and I heard a report on WINS New York that cars were exploding all around the Ground Zero area, and they thought that maybe bombs were placed in the cars, but then that report went away. So now I'd like to read something. This is from EMT Patricia
Androvic.
And here's what she says. Okay? There's hundreds of cops all running up there, and I ended up running through this park, and I couldn't even see where I was running anymore. I kept running north. Question. Through North Park? Yes. I guess that's North Park. It's a big, green, grassy area. And there's nothing there. As I was running up there, two or three more cars exploded on me. They weren't near any buildings at that point. They were just parked in the street. The traffic guys hadn't gotten a chance to tow anything yet, because this was all during the first hour, I guess, of this thing happening. So there were still cars parked on the street and that were completely independent of that. Three cars blew up on me. Stuff was being thrown. I went home all bruised that day. Thank God it was only bruises. I just ran into this park along with a bunch of other people, and stuff was blowing up. I don't think I looked back, but you couldn't see anything. Everything was just black. I was running, and I was falling over people, because people were crawling on the ground because they couldn't see anymore. I just kept on running north. I could smell water, so I just kept on running towards the water, because I knew that my coat was on fire. And I figured, well, if I can see a boat over the water, I'm just going to jump onto the boat and take that thing to Jersey, because no one wants to blow up Jersey. Stuff is just blowing up behind me as I'm running. I can hear stuff exploding. I can hear rumbling. The street under me was moving like I was in an earthquake. I've been in those, so I know what they feel like. It felt like an earthquake. So what do you make of that, Dr. Judy, that person?
She's describing what she was experiencing. One of the biggest things that jumps out at me with that is that I went home with bruises, all bruised that day. Thank God it was only bruises. She has stuff blowing up on her, and she only has some bruises.
Yeah, that is interesting.
She also had her hair catch on fire, but nothing hit her.
Nothing hit her, and her coat caught on fire too, right?
Yeah. Instead of calling it a turnout coat, she called it a burnout coat. It's on fire. And because the dust going up and blocking out the sunlight, you couldn't see where you're going, but she said, oh, now she's a human flashlight because her coat was on fire.
Now, wasn't that, like you said, the coat was meant to repel fire, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
But it caught on fire. What would cause that?
Well, it appeared to be fire. We're not going to call it fire.
Right, it appeared to be fire.
What appeared to be fire. Weird fire is what I've used because just something to mark it is not assuming it's fire. But it's, something weird was going on. She also had her shoelaces appeared to go into spontaneous combustion. But she didn't get clobbered with any, she went home all bruised that day. Thank God it was only bruises.
Yeah, thank God it was only bruises. Everything is, So
she doesn't describe being hit by anything.
No, not at all. And she also said it was independent of where the towers were, too, she said, didn't she?
Well, it was going north.
Yeah, so it's not like the towers fell on top of this and the gasoline was exploding inside the gas tank. It was,
but she wasn't burned.
Right, but they were lighting up.
Yeah, her hair appeared to catch on fire. But, she didn't talk about having been burned. There's also another Patrick Connolly, first responder, who, while one of the tires was coming apart, he tried to get into Building 7. He decided that wasn't a safe place and came back out, couldn't see where he was going. And then thank goodness the car started lighting up because then he could see where he was going.
That's the other one I was thinking of. Yep, everything just spontaneously. He literally said that they spontaneously lit up and he could see. He said that.
And that actually is a more precise term, lit up. He wasn't saying caught fire. They lit up. This weird fire issue. And actually I have pictures right along the path at about the time when he was walking up there. So these are the vehicles he would have seen. Right, there's a van with this weird fire on the side panel of the van. What's burning? It's not burning. It's something else going on. And you see all this unburned paper at the same time, all around the vehicle.
Yes, I'm looking at that photo right now, Dr. Judy. What I'm
and bushy trees. And 284.
284, yeah. Figure 293. It's got the glowing Cheetos around it.
Yep. And you see the side fire on the van up there. What's on fire?
Yes, and I, it's not fair for me because I know because I read your book. And just because, like you said, it looks like fire doesn't mean it is fire.
Right. And you see these glowing, I call them Cheetos, because, it's not a snack food, Cheetos.
Oh, definitely not.
This orange thing in that shape, and it's sitting on paper, and the paper's not burning.
Right.
So just because it's glowing, hot things glow, but not everything that glows is hot. And an example I give in the book is a fluorescent light versus an incandescent light. One of them's hot, one of them's not.
Very true.
Fireflies glow.
Well, they do glow, yes. But you also gave an example in the book of plasma as well.
Right. Plasma can glow without or put off light without being hot.
And you also talked about St. Elmo's fire. Let's talk about St. Elmo's fire a little bit when it comes to like inside a tornado.
Well, there's actually a cool video I saw that was taken inside of an airplane cockpit. Where you had this blue, looks like lightning going all over the windshield. And it's strange. But there have been people who, tornadoes pass over them and they look up in them, and see kind of like lightning inside of them. And actually, after my book came out and somebody read my book, they emailed me to know they had been in a tornado they were picked up. They were out in football practice and were picked up by a tornado. The coach didn't call them in soon enough. And said it was, you know, painless. It was, they were, you know, carried inside the funnel cloud. And motion was effortless. And proprioception was precise. Proprioception is knowing where parts of your body are. Like being able to touch your nose with your eyes closed, you know, your finger knows where your nose is.
Yes.
So he was very aware of what, you know, where he was. And then it eventually gently shut him down. Undamaged.
Right.
He could breathe just fine inside the funnel cloud. So it wasn't like a vacuum cleaner sucking him up.
No, that's very interesting. I found that quote from firefighter Patrick Conley. I'd like to read that. Everyone.
Okay.
This is a very important quote. Firefighter Patrick Conley recorded his observations just after World Trade Center 2 went poof. Cars were tires and cars were popping, and they were just starting to light up spontaneously. And there was near zero visibility at this stage. It was better, though, than it was right after the collapse. And then we walked up two blocks. We walked up there. There was a hot dog stand there. We broke the window in the hot dog stand, took bottles of water, and we were washing our eyes because our eyes were burning. So he says right there that cars were just popping and lighting up spontaneously.
Yeah.
So what mechanism would possibly cause that? A controlled demolition would not do that, and neither would mini nukes.
Well, right. We're noticing this is a phenomenon, you know, collecting the evidence. This is something that happened that we can, you know, put in our list of things that happened. You know, about eliminating mini nukes and thermite and all that, that's eliminated by the fact that those people in Stairwell B did not burn up. Nor did they get smashed and squashed and, you know, under a pile of debris. Kinetic energy, if you start with the destructive mechanism, not thermite, not, you know, an endpoint. Is it this, is that? As guesswork, you know, pot shots in the dark. But looking at the destructive mechanism, this destructive mechanism is not kinetic energy. The buildings did not get smashed to death. It is not thermal energy. The buildings were not cooked to death. So something that cooks buildings to death, you know, is out of the running. Something that smashes buildings to death is out of the running. That's the easiest way to eliminate those things. We're not going to talk about, you know, item by item. You know, what about pea shooters? Well, what about wrecking balls? What about, you know, kinetic energy didn't do it.
No, that's
thermal
not.
Thermal energy didn't do it.
No, you can see that by the evidence that we've just covered a little bit.
Right. And that's one of the biggest misconceptions that people make when I say, you know, directed energy, and how I'm defining that is like giving directions. Where somebody directs a movie, they're telling people what to do. They're directing it. Well, energy was directed to do something differently than it normally does. You know, non-contact, something didn't, reach over and clobber it. It was instructed to do something differently than it normally does, and it was instructed to do it in a certain geographical area. So I call that directed energy. There's a whole category of directed energy, piece of technology. Now, laser beam from space, no, that's eliminated because that would cause a destructive mechanism of thermal energy, you know, cooking something to death. The buildings are not cooked to death. So laser beams from outer space is eliminated because that's a thermal energy thing. I'm talking about just categories, directed energy versus thermal energy versus kinetic energy. We can get rid of, you know, kinetic energy and thermal energy as being the cause.
And I think what the problem is this directed energy was hidden from Joe Q public for all these years. It's now starting to come out of the closet. The military talks about it more and more each day.
Oh, it isn't really, you know, directed energy has been around for quite a while. What is a microwave oven?
Exactly.
What is your cell phone? What is a TV remote control? Now, they aren't used as a weapon, unless you do use them as a weapon. They're directed energy.
Right, but we can use the LRAD. I believe LRAD devices that they use for crop control would be a directive energy weapon, wouldn't it, Dr.?
Well, there's a microwave thing they do for crop control.
The microwave gun, yeah. The I forget the exact name of it, but those are all forms of directive energy. And they were just hidden from the public, and that's why...
What is a radio? You know, your signal comes to your radio. That's direct energy. It's not necessarily used as a weapon, but it's directed energy.
Exactly. Exactly. And you just... I want to touch on the dust cloud, Dr. Judy. The rollout of the dust cloud. And we had an eyewitness that was on scene that can testify to what you say in your book, that the dust cloud was cool.
Cooler than ambient temperature.
Cooler than ambient temperature. We have an eyewitness, a Wall Street trader, that was on scene by the name of Tommy, that testifies that he was running from the dust cloud. He thought he was going to be like, it was going to be hot or whatever. He was running towards the river, and he ran out of room, and it caught up with him, and it was like a cool breeze.
And there's various folks who were, trying to run from the dust clouds, and it caught up to it, mowed them down, and kept on going, and it just left them covered with dust.
Exactly. So
they'd stick their face into their armpit to try to breathe, use that their shirt for a filter. There was that issue, but it wasn't being cooked to death.
No, it wasn't. It was what we call, and you mentioned in your book, is LENR, low energy nuclear reaction.
Well, I'm comparing it to, parallel evidence.
Right.
That's another misconception people get is, oh, she's saying it was this, she's saying it was that. Well, she has a light bulb theory. No,
right.
The incandescent fluorescent lights are an example of the fact that hot things glow, but not everything that glows is hot. It's like, bombs go boom, and not everything that goes boom is a bomb. Stick an egg in your microwave oven and, see what happens. It'll go boom. It doesn't mean it was a bomb. Or, TNT or something like that. But there's, we list all of these different pieces of evidence. Now, let's look more at the mechanism. Where do we see this mechanism elsewhere? And then you look at parallel evidence. Like, you can reproduce the same thing elsewhere. And that's why I did focus on tornadoes and hurricanes. Because you do see some of the same things with that. Like we were just talking about the levitation issue and the St. Elmo's fire, the tornadoes. And other interesting things about tornadoes, they're very poorly understood, but they slice buildings in two. And isn't that quite bizarre? How could it slice? As though, somebody took a knife and cut through the building. Doesn't it come to something more solid or something not so solid and tend to weave around?
Well, yes, tornadoes do that all the time.
They cut through stuff, soft stuff and hard stuff that's on a line, basically on a line.
And they'll leave one bedroom like the bed's still made and not even touched. It's so weird.
Like, yeah, and the other side of the room is gone. It's just a slice. Like,
yeah.
And it's not wind doing that.
No, it's like a field energy, isn't it?
It's some sort of a field effect that, where it starts and stops abruptly there. And, wind tapers off around the edges.
Right. And I noticed another place that not many people focus on that looked like it was sliced off. And that would be the Pentagon, where you could see the stool
exactly.
Still there. With the Bible
exactly.
Still on it?
Yeah, that dictionary or whatever it was that without being singed.
Yeah, it was the Bible. They said it was a miracle. Yeah, that was the Bible. But you look at it and it was nothing singed. It was like
it's a wooden stool, wooden podium. I think it's a podium it's on.
Yeah. And
you had this fireball going through there and, why is the building sliced? Abrupt slice there.
All right, Dr. Judy, we have a caller in the 368. Oh, area code. You're on the air live with Dr. Judy Wood and Ashley Jones.
Hi, this is Rory from Washington.
Hi,
how's
hello.
Dr. Wood.
Hello.
Hello, how are you? It's good to, nice to talk to you. First, I'd just like to thank you, Dr. Wood, for all of the work that you put into compiling this evidence in such a easily comprehensible form. This book is just amazing, and I just feel like it demonstrates kind of the same kind of effort that, you know, the responders put forth to save a life. So you're putting forward the same effort to, you know, do the same mission. I really appreciate that. Just want to thank you personally.
Well, thank you. I felt like I, you know, owed it to them too. They're going through their work. It's clear, you know, what they, the, how meaningful, you know, what they've done is, and how geared they were to saving lives.
Indeed, indeed. And it's some of the most, I believe, remarkable things come out of the, some of the survival testimonies, too. It's, in particular, Ronald Coyne, and when he, and some of his interview, he talks about seeing a woman impaled into a wall. This totally reminds me of Straw Into the Tree.
You know, exactly, exactly.
You know, and then, am I misinterpreting this, or am I reading it correct? Like cars going, are people going through cars and hitting the pavement? And that's, it's mind-boggling.
There's, you know, strange things that are not of any normal experience. And what I came to realize too, maybe you have as well, is, you know, these poor first responders who are asked to describe their experience, and they don't want to be thought of as a nutcase, but they want to describe what they experienced. And that must have been really tough.
Yeah,
like the one that Renee Conley or O'Carroll, that's who it was, who floated down the stairs. And you said, well, how could she float down the stairs? Well, she must have died and God carried her down the stairs. And she's trying to fit it into her model of the world.
Yeah, but seriously, that's insane. I'm noticing a lot of similarities, too, and things that are noticeable and common across the board, such as, like, the turbine noises right in when the towers begin to disappear.
Yeah, and, like a freight train coming, or like you know, airplane engines, or
it sounded like a tornado. That happens.
Yeah,
kind of the same sensation.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
And there was David Hensha described. He says it was like being picked up by a tornado. That's the way he described it.
Right, and it sat back down. And then, you know, obviously, the toasted cars, incredible. I just reached that chapter today, and it's that stands alone, in my opinion. I mean, the pictures stand alone, really. I mean, just take, if people just took a look at pictures, real good look, just one more time, it's just right there. It's all right there in front of us. You hardly need words, you know.
And you start looking at the patterns in them. You know, like the windshield would be gone, as well as all of the insulation around the lip, you know, for the cushioned seating, as though the car was being prepared for a paint job, like it had been sandblasted. It's just everything gone.
No, and no thought of question this. I mean, I just find it hard to believe it's in New York City. Yeah.
Yeah, it's, and I hope you understand that it takes a lot of discipline to just look at the evidence. Don't be saying, okay, this means this. If you're quick trying to jump to the answer and a multiple choice test, if you just sit back and, you know, calmly just take in the evidence, it paints a picture of just what happened. And
yes,
the punchline is, you know, people say, well, she doesn't have any evidence of what did it. Huh. I've got plenty of evidence. If the majority of the building turns into dust in midair, that is absolute proof that there is a technology that exists that can do that.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
It happens. So there's no answer to that.
I mean, $13 trillion in taxes has got to be going somewhere. I mean, come on now.
Right.
What's somebody been working on somewhere? Who knows? Anyway.
But we even see it's a phenomenon that happens in nature with tornadoes.
This is true. This is true. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, that hurricane, that was absolutely astounding. The fact that that was there. I can't really stop that.
Ah, you peeked ahead.
I know. I could know. Oh, man. It's a picture book. Come on.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Picture books.
And yeah. It was it was in 2010, what, just 4 years ago. Geraldo Rivera was on some show celebrating 40 years of reporting on hurricanes, and talks about how you
get
so slow and how you get so excited when, you know, oh, goodie, here comes a hurricane. And he says, well, you know, it's one thing. It's just too bad that 9/11, that it wasn't a hurricane.
Yeah, he said that in a really interesting way. I'm not quite sure what his, you know what I mean? That was interesting.
Right, yeah.
It
leaves a lot of questions, but whatever the case is, there's questions there.
Absolutely. And that's one thing, man. This book has just raised so many questions, and good questions. And the questions in this book are absolutely legitimate. And, you know, it's something that seriously people need to take a look at. I know I've been going around and every day, you know, every day I see someone I don't know, and they are just, their mind gets blown, as did mine.
And I hope you appreciate that it's not about name that gizmo. No, it's about knowing that there's some kind of technology that can do this, and we're looking at what
I
it
think,
can do.
Yeah. And I think, you know, what is it that they've been hiding? And that's information. So for us, knowledge is our power. You know, that's what we need. We just need to keep collecting, keep finding the answers ourselves.
But also, if a technology exists that can do that, that means a technology exists that can be used to create free energy.
Oh, yes, indeed. And my, I cannot wait for this to happen, because it is going to happen, Dr. Wood. I would just like to let you know that. That's my positive affirmation for the night.
But it changes
everything. I believe
everything.
In my lifetime.
Yep, but it changes everything.
It does. It does. And
everything. You can't have
the same kind of product. I know. I really can't. I've been going off. This free energy conference, it was amazing. I've listened to everybody's presentations, and wow, that's all I got to say. It's just wow. I'm just so excited. I've been trying to recreate a little testicle oil at home. It's so much fun.
The key with this, if you look at the front cover of the book, after you've read the book, you realize that, you know, people say, well, free energy doesn't exist because so-and-so was proved a fraud, so-and-so was proved a fraud, because you'd have to go to their lab and see it happen. No, this, look at the cover of the book, you realize the entire world witnessed it. That means the entire world, if they understand what happened, knows that free energy technology exists.
Indeed.
That's the danger.
Yeah, that makes you feel really good. I'm not alone there.
Hey, Roy, this is Ashley. How are you?
Yes. Hey, Ashley, I'm great. Thanks for really giving me the opportunity to speak on your show tonight.
Thank you so much for calling in. I heard you telling Dr. Wood you've kind of skipped around in her book a little bit, I was wondering, have you looked into the chapter when she talks about lathering?
Yes, I have. Oh, the lathering. Yes, I have. That's very intense. It's very insane. And it's exactly what we saw. I was just talking to someone about 15 minutes ago, actually, about that. They argued that it was smoke. And that's okay. It doesn't look like smoke to me. I spent some time with the fire service myself, and, you know, reading smoke, putting out smoke. And it's like, well, this just isn't right.
So you know, you understand that if it's smoke, you can't breathe because it's taking the oxygen out of the air.
Right. Oh, that reminds me. Yes. And another thing I thought was really interesting is that their breath, it was stifled, but then as it was taken into their bloodstream, that's when they got their breath back. And that's, I mean, very disturbing, but that's crazy. You know, yeah, it wasn't smoke. That's what the one survivor and the second star. When he said he said I was just gonna go until I felt fire. Yeah, that means a lot, because I mean he's looking at this smoke, but he's looking at the lather coming up the hallway, going, you know, I'm gonna go through that until I feel the actual flames. I mean, and he ended up making it out. It's and then the Kobe. you know, that was great. Him witnessing the justification on the third floor turned me on to that.
There, I guess, a new one on the job, and was told to follow his boss, do exactly, you know, what his boss says. And they got to some floor, and his boss said, drop everything. And then, you know, stop, you know, drop everything. And then, okay, later they continue on, and his boss says, where's your face mask? Well, you said to drop everything. You got to get out of here. You don't have a face mask? Get out of here. So the probie's heading downstairs. The poor guy. So he's heading downstairs, making it out, and he gets down to the third floor, and the third floor is turned to dust. And it's opaque. No light in it whatsoever, but he realized it was dust and not smoke. And he just made it out of the building when the building went poof. So that it turned out that saved his life.
This is absolutely amazing. This is an absolutely amazing book, isn't it, Roy?
Oh, absolutely. I feel it's one of the most important books I've ever owned in my life. I think it's one of the most important books in my lifetime. This is definitely, this is it. I mean, this is, it's huge. It's huge. Words are hard.
And yeah, I try not to tell people what to think, and the best compliment I've gotten on it is it's a course in critical thinking. You have to get the person to see it for themselves, not believe you, but to understand for themselves, and that was my goal.
Absolutely. Yeah, now I've noticed I'm doing it with everything now. You know, I'm breaking everything in my life, right? It's a process. You introduce to into a certain type of processing, and I find it very effective. Thank you, Dr. Wood.
We can't get out of anything by believing in someone. We have to be able to understand it ourselves to survive as a people. And that's something that has really been concerned to me is that, how did we get here? We got here from follow the leader blindly. So we need to be able to think independently, and that's a vital thing. Otherwise, we cease being, humans.
Well, thank you so much for calling in, Roy. We have another caller.
You guys get right on it. I had a great time. Dr. Wood, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Roy. You're excited this night. All right, we're going to take a break, and we come back, and we're going to talk to a caller in the 440 area code, so please hang on the line.
You are listening to the ACR Network, Alternate Current Radio Network. Listening to the Red Pill Radio Show with Ashley Jones. Find us on the web at alternatecurrentradio.com. Join our group and like us on Facebook by searching for Alternate Current Radio. If you need a mobile app, look for us on Spreaker at Spreaker.com. In addition, we can be found on Shoutcast.com, TuneIn.com, and on iTunes Podcast for downloadable episodes. Call in and join our conversation. We want to hear from every one of you. Our call-in phone number is 567-704-7851, and the passcode is 379-417-pound. Again, our phone number is 567-704-7851, and the passcode is 379-417-pound. Welcome to The Real.
HeavyCoverInc.com.
Everything you need, from your water filters and storage to military and tactical headwear and firearm accessories. Whether it's that bug-out bag or anything you would want to have inside it, Heavy Cover Inc. has the reliable, high-quality items you are going to need. With standard, express, and even international shipping, you can have everything you need within days from ordering. When I started hoping for the best, but planning for the worst, my first stop was HeavyCoverInc.com. Survival kits, cover from the elements, outdoor and prep gear of all kinds. Check out Heavy Cover. You'll be glad you did.
Welcome back, everyone. I'm your host, Ashley Jones, and you're listening to the Red Pill Radio Show, live on AlternateCurrentRadio.com. And I'm having a very important discussion tonight with Dr. Judy Wood. She wrote the book, Where Did the Towers Go? Evidence of Free Energy Technology on 9/11. Her website, other website is drjudywood.com. And we just had a fabulous call from a firefighter by the name of Roy, who just purchased Dr. Wood's book probably about 3 weeks to a month ago, and he's really excited about reading it, and he's really understanding it.
So there's a lot of relief in there after wondering for so long of what happened.
Oh, yes, I'm sure there is. So are you ready for take another call, Dr. Wood?
Sure.
Area code 440, you're on with Ashley Jones and Dr. Wood.
Hi, this is Rhonda. I'm calling from Ohio, and I'm really enjoying the show. Hi, how are you? Dr. Judy, I just had a quick question, and then I'm going to hang up and listen to your answer. I was wondering about all the people that were jumping when the fires seemed to be out. Do you have any information on that?
Well, without speculating, you can see there's something that's causing them to go out the window. It's not a normal situation. And you really feel for the first responders because they're geared to saving lives, and there's nothing they could do. You know, there's one guy, they had to watch him and hold on to him because he was going to go out and try to catch him. And, you know, it would have killed him. But there was something that was making them go out the window and violently going out the window. You could look at various scenarios where, you know, like if you put your hand on your stove burner, you don't sit and say, I wonder if I should take it off. No, your hand just flies off out of reflex. It was that kind of thing, like there's something that was maybe so painful that it gave them the reflex of jumping away from it. But looking also at them as they're falling through the air, some of them look like, how'd I get here? And it's one guy, it's kind of like, looks like he's flapping his wings. His arms are flapping. See, it's faster than the shutter speed of the camera. And there's other ones that are, you know, quite a distance from the building that, you know, the world record holder in the standing broad jump would have trouble jumping that far out. So there's a lot of questions with that. And there's a couple of people in particular, you know, one woman called her husband and said, I'm going to start heading downstairs now. I'll call you when I get to the bottom. And a few stories later, out the window she went. There's no intention of doing that. So there's something that was driving them out. So it's not normal. And you look also at some other bizarre things. There's, you know, some people hang from the outside of the building that are, they have their clothes off or, you know, shirt off or pants off. Or there's one guy that really struck me. It looked like he was hanging from a hand and a foot. It looked like he was taking his pants off outside the building, 105th floor. Now, you know, you put yourself in that situation and think of possibilities. If there's smoke in there, well, there's no smoke pouring out that window, but if there's smoke in there and if for some reason you need to take your pants off, okay, why not just hold your breath, step inside, take the pants off, and then get back outside? what necessitates taking the pants off outside the building? And, for me, I go through various scenarios, like the woman who went out the window a couple of stories after she talked to her husband by cell phone. She and her friend had gotten some wet clothing from their desk, and gotten it wet, wrapped around their heads to head downstairs. And that's what I would have done. I would have made a beeline to the bathroom before we lost water pressure, gotten some extra clothing wet, wrapped it around my head, and face, and, you know, use it as a mask and head for the stairs. So it's a good chance that people would be wet. If the sprinklers kicked on, they'd be wet. If they didn't kick on and it was hot, they'd be wet. So there's a lot of good reasons to think that, you know, people might be wet. And it is known that there's certain energy fields that affect wet clothing more than dry clothing. For example, I'm not saying this is what it is, but just, you know, for a mental image, think of a microwave oven. You put a paper plate in there and not much happens to it. You put a wet piece of chicken on the paper plate and it'll cook. Or, you know, water in a cup boils. The cup's handle still, you can pick it up. So there's also active denial system, I think you're talking about, Ashley?
Yes, I'm actually on that page right now. Active denial system, yeah.
Yeah, that used for crowd control, and it said that, you know, wet clothing is many times worse than dry clothing. It doesn't help you. It fries. It makes you think that the top layer of your skin is getting fried. So if there's something like that, I'm not saying it was microwave, but, you know, something like that, some kind of energy field was going on inside the building, it would make sense for what was happening. That they would have, you know, if their clothing was wet, they'd probably want to get rid of it. And so they wouldn't fry so much. And then, you know, why they would want to do it on the outside of the building, dangling by hand and a foot from the 105th floor. But any way you look at it, it doesn't make sense for a regular conventional fire. Firefighters don't fight fires in the nude. They wear heavy clothing as a protective layer between them and the fire. So you wouldn't want to be taking your clothes off. You'd want to be adding more to it.
So, Dr. Wood, I'm looking at page 32 in your book about the jumpers. Right?
Okay.
I'm looking at this picture of all the people hanging out the window where you're describing that one man who's hanging on by one hand and taking his pants off. So I decided,
he appears to be doing that.
He appears to be doing it. Okay. So I decided to count how many people have their shirts off, and just by, you know, looking at this picture, anywhere from 18 to 20 people have their shirts off.
And there's some that look like they have their pants off.
Yes, it's just unusual.
And there's one guy in, I guess it's a few pages back from that, where he's, it was page 28, where it looks like he's got, you know, pant leg halfway off, and it's you know, flapping in the breeze behind him as he's falling.
Yes.
It's a strange phenomenon. And, you know, also, many of the firefighters said in all of their, like, 20 years on the force, fighting fires, they've never once seen more than one person jump. And that person was jumping from, like, the second story into a net.
No, that is so true. Usually the people wait it out, especially in a building that big and so many floors. Why would you jump?
A metal frame building isn't going to burn up.
No. And that's why, and a lot of people don't realize this, that's why the firefighters rushed into the building and the first responders. They had no idea that the towers were going to go away.
But they know how to size up buildings. And if they know buildings in jeopardy of coming apart, falling down or whatnot, they're not going to be running into it like that.
No, they set up their on-site mobile headquarters in the lobby of the tower. So they were not afraid of it, the tower, you know.
But what's going to burn up? You know, you get a steel frame building with steel pans, floor pans, with some, you know, thin lightweight concrete poured in the floor pans.
Right, and they're trying to tell us, the official story, that they burnt up, you know, with through office furniture or whatever. At first it was the plane fuel, they said it was, that did it, but then that was proven wrong. It couldn't get to that, you know, couldn't get
that's
there.
That's kerosene. Yeah, your kerosene. Camping stove doesn't melt.
Right, a camping stove doesn't melt, you know.
This is one of the things that I thought of, like, that day. You know, people were saying, well, it's the jet fuel. And, well, gee, when an airplane flies overhead, do you feel drip, drip, drip of the engine melting? You know, I mean, if aviation fuel, you know, burning melts metal, how can you have an airplane flying?
Exactly. How could we cook? How could we cook on you know?
It's probably titanium thing, but also in the book is a picture of a kerosene tractor. And tractors run on kerosene.
Yes, they do, and there's also a kerosene stove that doesn't melt either.
Right.
So it was something else going on that day. There's a lot of a lot of anomalies like that can't be described with conventional.
If you, it's another thing. Okay, let's go back to the process elimination game. You know, I'm saying, okay, what about thermite or what about nukes? Would that cause people to dangle from the 105th floor and take the pants off?
No, not at all.
How would they know that the building was going to blow up? 30 minutes from then.
Yeah, they didn't.
It wasn't, part of the repertoire. Most of them did not know. There were also, was it Kevin Cosgrove, who was actually on a 911 call when he went poof. He was talking up until that point. He wasn't burning up.
No.
There
was another recording I heard. It was a woman, she was talking to her husband. And she was in her office still. And she said that the room was, that she was getting hot, but it wasn't. You remember what I'm talking about?
Melissa Doy.
Yeah.
That was actually, when I first listened to it, I went, wait, this is a fake recording. Well, there's a couple reasons to argue against that, because the Smith-Mundt Act was still in effect, which meant no government documents can contain fake information. They can have wrong conclusions, wrong interpretations. They can omit data, but like photoshopped stuff or like a staged fake, thing. But also, this seems so fake. Like, because she doesn't seem like she's hot. And it went on for like 5 minutes where she's saying, I'm really hot. I'm burning up. Can't breathe. And we're choking. You never once heard her cough or choke.
No, you didn't.
And she talked about having gone, before she made the call, gone around all the corners of the floor and finding no place that it felt good. It was really hot, really burning up, but didn't talk about having been burned. Why isn't she hanging her head out the window? There's a lot of questions that come in, but the biggest thing that hit me is, I was at Virginia Tech. I used to swim every morning. And there's some fraternity guys that, as a gag, cranked up the thermostat on the pool the night before.
Okay.
That's one time, and it was either 92 or 93 degrees, I forget which, when we went in there. And they said, you swim at your own risk. We're going to close the thing. And good, I hate getting cold water. This is going to be fun. And so I hop in. I get halfway across the pool, and I realize I'm in trouble. I'm building up heat faster than I can dissipate it. So I just decided to relax and roll over, on my back and just try to, chill out. And somebody threw me a rope, and I remember thinking, is that worth reaching for? That's hard. It was like I was in honey, and everything was hard. Now, add to that, there's a time limit how long you can stay in the hot tub, because if you get too hot, you physically cannot make your muscles go.
So is it like sort of the opposite, like hypothermia, being cold?
Yep. And so, then I re-listened to Melissa Doy saying, I'm really hot, burning up, can't breathe. Didn't stutter at all. It was very hyper. Now, if you've been, way too hot for 5 minutes, and I heard at least 5 minutes on this clip, that's how you'd be talking. You'd be having trouble making your muscles work.
Yes.
You'd be lazy, not hyper.
Oh, I know. When I get hot, I'm very lazy. I don't want to do anything.
And then I started realizing, she thinks she's hot, but physically her muscles aren't hot. So, you know, that's also consistent with, I'm not saying it's proof, it's consistent with, like, the active denial system. I'm not saying that's what was used, but an energy field which makes the skin feel like it's burning up, but isn't cooking the body.
Well, Dr. Judy, you know the active denial system can be used for lethal purposes, not just crowd control?
Right, well, yeah, if you crank it up. But even yeah. without cranking it up, like, there's these video clips where the reporter is testing it. He's testing it behind a mattress, whatever. He's saying, let's see how long it can stand there. 1 minute, 2, ah, you know, he runs. You know, he just cannot stay there any longer.
Well, there are reports. I remember, because after I discovered you and bought your book, I went, you know me, I'm a researcher. I look at everything, okay? I look for the evidence where it points.
Good.
So I spent one Saturday afternoon almost like 9 hours just researching directive energy and directive energy weapons and stuff like that. And so I actually found old reports, old videos, clips, YouTubes from the Iraq, the first Gulf War, where the active denial system was used on the, during Kuwait and all that against mm-hmm. the Iraqi Republican Guard. And there were reports coming out that they were finding people, like soldiers and stuff, that were burned from the inside out.
Right, and some strange things. Another thing that caught me about that particular thing, it was somebody at the, I think was it Baghdad Symphony Orchestra violinist in there, and he talked about, and the American soldiers came in and took out old earth and brought in new earth, you know, dirt.
Yes, they did the same thing at the World Trade Center complex.
That would caught my attention really fast. Why would they be moving dirt in and out? You know, around the places, but we just, you know, take in that data to say, yeah, there's other situations, but what we do know is we have a lot of data from this particular situation that it isn't dependent on anything else to know, you know, okay, here are the different things this gizmo does. Call it, you know, Acme Gizmo, you know, 1-2A, if you need a name for it. And it doesn't matter where the parts are located or what the operator had for breakfast that morning. What it matters is what it does.
Exactly.
And to drive that home more, a lot of people have trouble with the idea of, like, interference.
Yeah.
They're using two or more signals and interfering them together. And someone gave me a really nice example to think of is your cell phone. You know, a cell phone by itself, you can't communicate with it. You need a cell tower to connect to.
That's true. Absolutely.
So you need a working cell phone and a cell tower. Now, how many people, when they make a cell phone call, do they know where exactly the tower is?
I have no clue, I'll be honest.
You just know if it works.
That's it. I just call. I just dial.
Yeah, and you might look at how many bars you have, you know, of the signal strength, but there's a region around the cell tower. Not necessarily, you know, what do you call it, spherical or any particular shape, but there's a region. Any place in that region, your cell phone works. Outside that region, it doesn't work. And so you need both things to get your phone call happening. So let's say there's one kind of field that would be around New York City, and then another signal within that, is you need both. Neither one by itself would do it. It's the interaction between the two.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That makes perfect sense. And you can see that in some of the pictures, the field effects that you talk about in your book, where the car would be like, the door handles would be like, disappear and... You know,
what got me is this one trick when I call it the wax spot car. It looks like, you know, it's got a new wax job on the back end, but there's a spot where, you know, it appears to be in pristine condition where everything around it is toasted. Now, fire doesn't work that way. It doesn't have, you know, 1 nanometer to the left, it's totally toasted, 1 nanometer to the right, it's in pristine condition. Fire is, you know, it's hot, cold, and shades of gray in between. But this is like there or not there. That's what first, you know, went, aha. You can get that with interference, you know, of two signals. One signal by itself doesn't do it. Another signal by itself doesn't do it. But where they interfere, it would happen. So it's not a a natural fire progression or heat. You can't have something that's really hot next to something that's really cold that just naturally occurs that way.
No, it's you can't. And I think the problem is a lot of people don't understand how it works. Behold, they're just ignorant. They don't know how it works. And
but they don't need to.
Yeah.
Just like you don't need to know how the internal combustion engine works in order to drive your car.
Very, very true.
You turn the key and it goes, and that's what matters. Kind of like the cell phone, it works or it doesn't work. And here we're looking at what this thing does. You don't need to know exactly how it works, but you can see that it does these things. Like, you know, seeing a building turning into dust in mid-flight as it's going through the air, you have chunks of steel trailing lots and lots of dust.
Yes, you can literally see the
steel. And then it's like how it melts away and it runs out of steel.
Yeah. What really got my attention, the first thing that got my attention was watching that high-definition clip of the tower coming apart in slow motion. And I could watch the steel beams just disintegrate. In the
one that comes down the corner, you can see that it's like a white stick that just. And you're not going to tell me that the dust, passed the steel beam, you know, went faster.
No, definitely not. No, I watched it, and you can just go to that. Just go to YouTube, you know, for the listeners. Just go to YouTube and punch in high definition World Trade Center. They'll call it collapse, and punch in Dr. Judy Wood, and you'll be able to watch it. And you will be amazed, I promise you.
There's another interesting clip of it referred to as the spire. It's those core columns that remain, you know,
spire,
just
yeah.
for a few seconds after the tower goes poof. And you see blue sky all around it, and then you see this thing kind of just, you know, kind of faint into dust.
In your book, you have a frame-by-frame shot of it.
And my detractors, like, say, oh, well, that was dust that settled on it, and then it shook the dust off of it and fell over. Well, how does dust settle on a vertical column? How does it settle instantaneously? Then they say the dust hangs in the air because it's so fine. Well, if it hangs in the air because it's so fine, how does it settle on the thing?
No, that's so true. So
you can't have it both ways.
No, you really can't. And we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back with more with Dr. Judy Wood.
You are listening to the ACR Network, Alternate Current Radio Network.
Is that Yogi or Wally?
Yogi,
tune into the Red Pill Radio Show with me, your host, Ashley Jones. Monday through Thursday from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Take the red pill and see how deep the rabbit hole goes.
You are listening to the Red Pill Radio Show with Ashley Jones. Find us on the web at alternatecurrentradio.com. Join our group and like us on Facebook by searching for Alternate Current Radio. If you need a mobile app, look for us on Spreaker at Spreaker.com. In addition, we can be found on Shoutcast.com, TuneIn.com, and on iTunes Podcast for downloadable episodes. Call in and join our conversation. We want to hear from every one of you. Our call-in phone number is 567-704-7851, and the passcode is 379-417-pound. Again, our phone number is 567-704-7851, and the passcode is 379-417-pound. Welcome to The Real.
Cosmic corner of the universe. Ignition sequence start. 10.
Astrophase.
9.
Cancer.
8.
SSRI.
7.
Methanol.
6.
Electronic surveillance.
5.
GMO.
4.
The New World Order.
3.
Rex 84.
2.
Vaccine.
1.
Synchronicity.
Ignition.
Liftoff. We have liftoff on the Alternate Current Radio Network. Want to hear the truth from the outer recesses of the human condition on these topics and others affecting your life?
This is Cosby. I strive to find experts in their fields, bringing important information to your corner of the universe. So just stay tuned to the Alternate Current Radio Network at alternatecurrentradio.com. Look under Latest Radio Archives and scroll down to Cosmos Order of the Universe on the Alternate Current Radio Network.
HeavyCoverInc.com. Everything you need, from your water filters and storage to military and tactical headwear and firearm accessories. Whether it's that bug-out bag or anything you would want to have inside it, Heavy Cover Inc. has the reliable, high-quality items you are going to need. With standard, express, and even international shipping, you can have everything you need within days from ordering. When I started hoping for the best, but planning for the worst, my first stop was HeavyCoverInc.com. Survival kits, cover from the elements, outdoor and prep gear of all kinds. Check out Heavy Cover. You'll be glad you did.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to the Red Pill Radio Show. I'm your host, Ashley Jones, and I'm having a very important discussion with Dr. Judy Wood. And at this time, we're going to play a quick clip. We call it Collapsing to Dust.
Okay. I'll play it over my microphone. Let's see.
You have two 110-story office buildings. You don't find a desk. You don't find a chair. You don't find a telephone, a computer. The biggest piece of a telephone I found was half of the keypad, and it was about this big. The building collapsed to dust.
So, wow, that's a powerful, powerful statement right there, isn't it, Dr. Judy?
Yep, that was a first responder who was at the site. And I would like to add that not only you didn't see one desk and one chair, you didn't see a toilet.
Yeah, where did the toilets go?
And there should be, you know, thousands there.
I think the book said 3,000, over 3,000.
Yeah, and you know, they're easy to spot. They're you know, shiny porcelain chunks, even pieces of it. And there was none.
They're not that light either, because my friend was a plumber, and I used to see him happen to, like, break them up sometimes to get them, you know, to get rid of them.
Right, but you see, easy to recognize those chunks in any junkyard.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So that was strange. There's only one identifiable file cabinet.
Yes, let's talk about that.
It was had paper still in it. It was wired up like a beach ball.
Was it paper or was it money? I heard it was money.
It had money, but it was in paper folders, and it had, you know, red divider and a blue divider. The colors were still there.
So what could...
And they found it belonged to Ben and Jerry's ice cream store, and they were able to return the money to the... to the owner.
Now, how could that be anything to do with intense heat for that to end up that way, Dr. Judy?
Right, the way it was all wadded up, and the wadded up nature of it, it isn't what you would see with crushing. You know, you step on a soda pop can, and the outside of it looks like an accordion, you know, when it buckles. And that's what buckled beams should look like. They don't end up looking like a Fruit Loop.
No, they definitely don't end up looking like a Fruit Loop. And they, you know, and also we would like to talk about the beams, the steel beams that were really huge. I forget how long they were, but they were pretty tremendous. And they were like, I've seen the pictures in your book, and you describe it as a rolled up carpet.
Right. These are, you know, the outside columns. When something buckles, like a soda pop can, you know, it has kinks in it. It's like an accordion. And it buckles around the horizontal axis. You know, it folds around the horizontal axis. These curled up around the vertical axis. They're not loaded that way. They had the, I call them wheat checks. Actually, it was a photographer that first called it that. They look like, you know, wheat checks from cereals. But there's these sections of three columns wide by three stories tall. They came in prefab to make the buildings out of. But when the building, and they're bolted together, when the buildings came apart, there's, you know, these things around, but they curled around the vertical axis. They didn't buckle over.
No, they didn't.
And you see in the rolled up carpet chapter, you see these columns standing. Well, even as we remember, those last standing wheat checks around the outside, they're not bent over. They're straight like soldiers.
Yeah, now the pictures that I'm, you know, looking at here with the rolled up carpets, they you know what they look like to me? You remember those ribbon candies you used to get when you were a kid? Like those little ribbon things?
Oh, you're talking about figure 479. Look like, I call it kick batter.
I think those are them, yeah. They're like, but that's what they look like just like to me in the book. And I'm like, how can that happen due to fire or anything? I mean, there's something else was going on.
Or figure 478 on page 465, right? You call it the burrito. It's, you know, you get the parts curled around the vertical axis, but the building's not loaded around the vertical axis.
No, it's definitely, I mean, it's unexplainable from conventional.
Or the lasagna noodle, page 466.
Yeah, the lasagna noodle.
Yeah, it's not buckled. Yeah, that looks like curling ribbon from packages.
Yes, and then the other one is curled over, I'm looking at right now. It looks like somebody took it and, like, you know how, like, you do, I guess, like with welding, I guess? You heat something up and you can bend it? But this, you can't
bend it like that without breaking it.
No, no way. I mean, this looks like it's like a hook almost. It's bent over.
But it's also, it's bent more than 180 degrees.
Oh yeah, no, it totally is. And then,
so how do you explain that if the building's, you know, getting crushed down? Why would it curl more than 180 degrees?
Yes, I'm looking at the noodle, the lasagna noodle. That one's incredible. Just looking at these pictures. That's why people really need to get your book, Dr. Judy Wood.
And notice that it's not discolored between the curled part and the not curled part.
Right. Absolutely.
But when going to look at, you know, parallel evidence, where have we seen this before? Well, most of we haven't seen that before. But there's somebody who turns out they can replicate this kind of thing.
Oh, the Hutchinson effect. Yeah, let's talk about the Hutchinson effect.
Hutchinson.
And Nikola Tesla as well.
Yeah, we can't go back and visit, well, at least I don't know how to. I can't. You never say never. But I don't know how to go back in time to visit Nikola Tesla and have him demonstrate. Yeah, so those are just stories in books as far as I'm concerned, because we can't prove it, you know, in the here and now. But there's somebody who replicates his work in the here and now. Oh, let me go visit him. So I did, and you know, saw these what he does, and then also saw a bunch of the samples that he's done, and nothing else would explain it. Actually, somebody had sent a scientist in Canada had sent some of these to major universities' metallurgy department and asked them how to replicate it. They had no idea what caused this or how to do another one like it. They'd never seen material like that before. This is the aluminum that was split open. It was just, you know, it was like delaminated, but it's extruded aluminum. It's not laminated. And that also brought to light something, a pattern I noticed in the toasted cars, which was this peeling effect. Split thickness of the door of the car was just peeled.
Yeah, those are incredible photos. Looking at them, and
but these aren't laminated structures.
No, they're
not.
It's
just like Hutchison could produce these, you know, this delamination appearance, and also things curling up. And in some of his videos, you could see like this piece of steel bar doing sit-ups, you know, squirming around. That it just the field causes it to do these things.
Yeah, he also by doing the field effects, he also produced the what they you would call the weird fires as well.
Right, it's apparent spontaneous combustion.
Yeah,
and I understand these lifters that folks make when they unplug them after they've been where they are for a while, they get spontaneous combustion appearing where the things have been operating when they turn it off. So that's kind of interesting.
And I'm also looking at a picture here of levitation that John Hutchison did.
Levitation of water. Oh, he puts it in a cardboard box. How do you do that with water? How do you hold it to the roof of the box, turn the box upside down? It doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't. And then the toy boat looks like on fire, but it's not. It's like that weird fire type.
Right, and it's right after you turn it off.
Right after you turn it off, just like all the cars in the parking lot next to the World Trade Center.
Yeah, lighting up. Patrick Connolly talked about how he couldn't see his hand in front of his face because the dust that went up blocked out all the sunlight. And then, thank goodness, the cars started lighting up because then he could see where he's going. So we know the timing. So the tower's dustified, dust goes up, blocks out sunlight, and then the cars light up. Like right afterwards. It's not dirty. It was like after.
Another thing that was weird about that, what happened to the cars and stuff, there was a picture in your book, it looked like a parking lot, where these cars were like under the water for like a couple hundred years because they all rusted out and stuff, but this happened very quick.
Oh, you even got pictures of those cars while they're being toasted.
Yes. In the parking lot right next to the, not too far from where the towers once existed.
And it isn't all the cars either. It's just, you know, different ones here and there. But we don't have enough data to say this brand of car, not that brand of car, because it may be this location and not that location. So you need more study before you could draw any big generalities. Like every single car on West Broadway was toasted in some way. But the next street over, didn't happen.
And that would correlate with the field effects, wouldn't it?
Well, there's something that was, you know, the interference was happening one place, not another place. But we know that different things happen in different locations.
Well, just like a tornado will, like, leave a house alone and then grab the next one. It's the same, almost the same type of scenario, isn't it?
It's also material specific. And there's something else that I noticed a pattern. Yeah, why the cars, not the street signs, not the buildings next to them, not the bushy green trees, you know, leaning over the cars, just the cars that got toasted. And then you notice the pattern. They're up on rubber tires.
Right, absolutely.
So if there's some sort of charge building up in the environment, they can't discharge it as fast as it's building up. Actually, it was Hutchison that was explaining this, that's what he experienced in his experiments, that stuff that's not grounded, you know, gets more affected. And that's why they call it, you know, the lift or disruption. It means, you know, levitation or, you know, dustification. And that kind of makes some sense. So when I first decided to contact him after I just happened upon somebody's blog, you know, late at night, went, whoa, it looks like all the same effects that this person can reproduce. And so, I got to get a hold of this person. So I sent him a particular picture, and I said, it's in front of WFC1 with an upside-down car in front of a toasted car and some firefighters walking along the street. It's got a phone number on the picture. And I sent it to him. I said, does your neighborhood ever get to looking like this?
What did he say?
So we started talking. Yeah, he has had problems in his neighborhood. Like, somebody had some strange things happening elsewhere in his apartment building. But it's a curious thing. It's curious about what this world is like that we live in. you know, what it isn't just what we've been fed, you know, there's only electricity and magnetism and gravity. But what happens when you mix them? And it turns out they're, you know, well, okay, everyone kind of remembers in their youth, you know, whether it was in Cub Scouts or whatever, that if you get a wire and coil it around a nail and plug it into a 9-volt battery, voila, the nail is now a magnet.
Yes.
And as Tesla discovered about, you know, hydroelectric power plants, you move a conductor through a magnetic field and voila, you get electricity. So we know those two things are related. It turns out they're also related to gravity. Boyd Bushman, who got, you know, essentially three rocks that look the same, hollowed them out inside, and the middle one, the control, put, you know, non-magnetized metal, and, you know, the one on the left put magnets in where they're fighting each other. You know, a stack of magnets, they're fighting each other, and then the one on the right put the magnets in there where they're stuck to each other. They like each other. So one has, you know, stuck magnets together, and the other one, they're fighting as the non-magnetic one, and it was consistent. You drop those off the highest building on campus, guess which one hits the ground first? Consistently, every time. The one where the magnets are stuck together and the one where the magnets are fighting each other is the slowest to hit the ground. What that says is magnetism affects gravity. And if electricity affects magnetism, then electricity can affect gravity. And there's been studies about, you know, charging wingtips of planes to make them fly faster.
Really? I never heard about that one.
That's T. Townsend Brown was doing that sort of thing in the 50s, so it went underground. And actually, Hutchison has tried reproducing Thomas Townsend Brown's work by putting a charge to this little toy UFO.
Okay.
And you see it with the direct connect wire, high voltage wire. And, you know, the trolls on the internet take out the audio track and say, see, he's trying to do levitation with the string. No, it was he was putting high voltage into the UFO. And that's a fascinating video because you see this thing going to these weird contortions. You can't dangle something on the end of a string and have it do that. You know, zip to the left, stops, zip to the right. You know, it reminds you of what you see of, you know, the fake or the movies about UFOs, you know, how they fly at some speed and instantly stop.
Yes.
It does that type of thing.
That's amazing.
If it was dangling on a string, it would be, you know, like a pendulum back and forth.
Right.
But it also, when it bounces off the ground, it looks like it flashes out and springs back up. But, of course, you need more data than that. But he was trying to replicate the work of T. Townsend Brown. Well, I'm charging the thing to make it do something different.
Well, I'm also looking in your book on page 352, Dr. Judy, where it talks about George Pickett and his experiments with the silver balls. Let's tell our listeners about that. It's a very interesting experiment.
This is just over 100 years ago. He has this globe where it produces a static field, and then he has an electrical plate somewhere with some Leyden jars, and then he's got some steel balls that are suspended. And that is essentially what Hutchison does. He creates a static field, and within that interferes various radio frequency signals, like microwave. And voila, these things happen. And George, of course, you can't get a patent on Mother Nature, but you can get a patent on a gizmo that uses, you know, those concepts.
Yes.
And so this was over 100 years ago. Why don't we hear about it?
I can think of a couple reasons.
Now, another one we don't hear much about is Coral Castle. Ed Leedskown built it. By himself, this little, you know, 100-pound guy or 120-pound guy has these 15-ton stones that he lifted and put into place. He built himself a castle. Then he quarried those rocks. And then he decided he wanted to move 10 miles away, and he took the whole thing apart, and a friend was going to help tote them over to the other place with a flatbed truck. And he said, I just leave the truck here. I'll have it loaded up by morning. And he came back 20 minutes later, and this thing was half loaded. And, yeah, he wouldn't work in front of anybody. And I can appreciate that because it's like if you have a gun cabinet, you don't leave it unlocked unless everybody in the house knows what guns can do.
Very, very true, yes.
And so you're going to just show anybody how to do this. You're like, whoops, there goes the planet. Sorry about that.
Wow, and I'm sure, you know, we don't want to get the hands up in the hands of our military or government. Oh, whoops, too late.
Yep. Yeah, Tesla wanted to give free energy to the world, but was afraid it would fall in the wrong hands and be used as a weapon.
He was right.
Yeah, good news, we don't have to worry about that as a possibility more. Been there, done that. So now let's use it for free energy.
Yes, and we have the big oil companies that really would not want that to happen, now would they?
Yeah, he who controls the energy controls the people. But he who controls their perception controls everything.
That is so true. Yes, that is so true. And that gets into the whole psychological operation, which we never even had a chance to talk about tonight. So you're going to have to, I'm going to see, are you available to come back on? We can discuss that?
Sure. Okay. Sure. But remember, if you know how to know what you know that you know that you know, then that is a layer of immunity from believing what you're told and being led around, you know, like cattle.
Yes, and as you know from talking with me, I don't believe what I'm told, ever.
And, throw away your TV set. Richard Hall recently, I watched a presentation he gave. He says, if you think this is, throw your TV set out the window. If you think this is, throw your TV set out the window. He kept inserting that every once in a while. It was funny.
Who was that?
Richard Hall is a British guy.
Okay.
And it's talking about the different misconceptions people have. You need to throw your TV set out the window.
That is so true, yeah. Because a lot of people have been taught to think, well, I would tell people, like, this is happening and blah, 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 whatever. Well, I didn't see that on the news. Well, there's a reason, you know?
What's on the cover of my book? People did see that on the news, but they're just told to interpret it differently.
Well, actually, they took that away. They don't show that anymore, do they?
But they did for like 2 weeks straight, you know, the frothing towers.
They did, but then all of a sudden they took it away.
They're probably replaying it now, you know. It's the season to because they train people to feel fear when they see it. And when I brought out my billiard ball analogy, or the example of the mental exercise, if you apply that to these buildings, people are too trained to see it as a horror scene, and they can't think. Because they still have that reaction to those pictures. That's why they can handle it with billiard balls, but when you apply the same thing to, you know, flying dead bodies coming out of the building and you get these, you know, dust coming all over the place, they see what they're trying to see.
Yes, not the law of physics right all in front of them. Changes. The law of physics are all of a sudden changes. It becomes possible, right?
Because it's too terrifying to see, you know, what's really there. It's just, it's something they haven't seen before. And here's another thing that people often say is, well, the majority of the people believe such and such. Well, the majority of the people at one point thought the Earth was flat. Does that make it true?
That's very, very true. Yeah.
You know, popularity does not, you know, make something factual.
Usually you go the opposite.
Right. Means something is a better psyops. That's all it says.
Yeah. I usually go the opposite direction.
It was Mark Twain's quote. If it comes a time and you find yourself in the majority, it's time to pause and reflect.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I totally agree with that. And just like an illustration, I was watching what was going on in Ferguson live stream, and all the other reporters that listened to the police and let them corral them to this one parking lot. And this one reporter from Vice News says, they're all being corralled over there. I'm going this way. And he did. And he didn't get, you know, stuck up in a dragnet.
But there is a problem with it, and maybe we should save this for another show, with all media, not alternative media, not network media, but all media.
Oh, absolutely.
In our culture, it's driven on profit or on, you know, finances. And if you want your show, you know, financed, you need to feed the public what they want to hear. That's a problem.
Well, because they've been trained, it's like an entertainment for them now. It's entertainment.
Right, exactly. If you gave them the truth and it made them uncomfortable, your show wouldn't be popular anymore and you'd be, you know, tossed off the air. And you wouldn't get sponsors. And so when people say, oh, we have the controlled media, it's controlled by the people, by popularity. And if it's controlled by popularity rather than a public service, you know, issue, then it's going to be what the people want to see, not what is really there.
So that's really scary because I've noticed that the people nowadays are like really stupid stuff that's like on TV from what I hear, like really dumb reality shows and stuff.
Yeah, because people can't reject it. It isn't pushing them and making them feel scared or make them feel stupid or, you know, if it's over their head or, you know, if it's below them, it makes them feel smart so they feel better.
Right. So thank you so much for coming on my show, Dr. Judy. I enjoyed our conversation. And before you go, give out your website one more time.
This is drjudywood.com. That's drjudywood. And four letter in my last name, or wheredidthetowersgo.com, or you can just, look at wheredidthetowersgo.com. It's hard to type because there's no spaces in there. Just one word, wheredidthetowersgo.com.
And I promise you, buy her book, because like I've been saying since I met her and read her book, it's the most important book since the Bible.
I guess I'd have to agree, because it changes everything.
It changes your whole paradigm.
And so you bet it's worth covering up.
Oh, absolutely. Well, thank you so much, and have a good night, everyone.
Thank you. Thank you, listeners.
Give me liberty or give me death.